Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Do we have a quorum?
You do indeed, Interim President Woodrow.
Thank you. I call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the June 16, 2023 and August 16, 2023 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The minutes are approved. We now move to the President's report. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the fall semester. I hope everyone had a great summer and is returning recharged and excited for an exciting academic year. Our faculty, staff, and leadership have been working very hard to prepare for it, and I'm grateful to everyone for all you do to support the success of our students. I've certainly enjoyed greeting students during campus move-in, fall welcome events, and our fall convocation. And I was moved by the words of ASMSU President Emily Hoyumpa, who perfectly captured how I, and I believe so many others, feel about this place we call home. Emily said in her remarks to the incoming class, "East Lansing isn't just a home because of the place. It's a home because of the people." Beautifully said, Emily. And I should add, our preliminary enrollment reports underscore this point. The powerful draw of our people and this place has attracted 51,385 students to MSU. I think we should cheer. of whom are undergraduate students, the largest group on record. Should we cheer again? And we have the strongest, most diverse entering class of more than 11,000 first-year and transfer students, and 8,564 of them come from Michigan, making MSU once again the number one choice across the state and truly Michigan's state university. Should we just keep cheering? I think a university that celebrates is a great university, and as I think about what we do, we continue to make MSU stand out as a special community. I'm reminded of the words of MSU's 14th president, MSU's president Clifton R. Wharton. He recalled in his memoir that any university worthy of being called great needed a rich foundation in the arts, physical no less than intellectual. For historical context, the Whartons hosted faculty artists exhibitions at Kohl's House and purchased faculty art for their personal collection. Just this week, we received a beautiful portrait of former First Lady Dolores Wharton, which will proudly be displayed where these exhibitions were historically held at Kohl's House. The Whartons generously gifted their faculty art collection to the MSU Broad Art Museum in 2020, and we see some of it exhibited here today. We also have some pieces from the university's collection from the 1920s from two MSU faculty artists who were particularly impactful in arts education. Judith Stoddard, our Vice Provost of University Arts and Collections, will present on the importance of our faculty-wide art strategy, and I'm looking forward to her presentation, including hearing more about the launch of MSU of Arts MSU, which is a unified approach to centering the arts in the MSU experience. I'm also looking forward to tonight's public reception at the MSU Broad Art Museum, introducing its fall arts exhibitions. This is one of my favorite places on campus, and I hope to welcome many of you there this evening. All of this work happening around our campus stems from our belief, which the Whartons so marvelously modeled, that the arts are essential to building an inclusive, collaborative, adaptive, and globally minded community in keeping with our strategic plan. The arts truly are happening all around us at MSU, and today we celebrate this. There's so much more Spartan excellence happening all around us. We see this, for example, in the three MSU leaders who last month were named by Crain's Detroit Business as notable leaders in higher education, So hearty congratulations to Board Chairperson Dr. Rima Vassar, College of Music Dean James Forger, and Senior Vice President, CFO, and Treasurer Lisa Frace on their well-deserved recognition. I also want to give a shout-out to the President of our Council of Graduate Students, Hannah Jeffrey, who was named a Borlaug Scholar through the National Association of Plant Breeders. Hannah is working toward her doctorate in plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology, and is a highly engaged leader as well as scholar, and someone I thoroughly enjoy working with on behalf of all of our graduate and professional students. So congratulations, Hannah.
Yay.
Kudos are also due to Professor Emeritus Dan Gould, who was recently inducted into the International Society for Sports Psychology Hall of Fame. Dr. Gould, who was director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports, is one of the first 10 living scholars worldwide to be inducted. Please join me in congratulating Dr. Gould. And we're going to give a high five to women's golf head coach Stacy Slobodnik-Stoll, who last week won her second consecutive Golf Association of Michigan Women's Senior Championship. Our Spartans head coach for 25 years, she is the winningest GAM golfer ever with 18 individual titles. Finally, as the most recent indicators of our collective excellence, two new rankings place MSU among the top 25 public four-year colleges and universities. Forbes jumped MSU up 18 places from last year to number 63 among all four-year colleges and universities and number 24 among publics. And MSU rose 2 places in Washington Monthly's Best Colleges ranking to number 21 among public institutions. And I can tell you there's more good news to come later in the month. So we should celebrate MSU. Yay! Sharing these examples of Spartan excellence reminds me why MSU's 2030 strategic plan places its people, undergraduate and graduate students, faculty and academic staff, support staff, coaches, emeritus and retired members of our community, all of us, at its heart. Through the enumeration of our aspirations, we recognize that the measure of our rise as an institution is the measure of our efforts to foster excellence and opportunity for all. So how can we advance this critical goal and illuminate our path ahead? For one thing, we must link arms and continue to march to build a place where everyone can feel safe, welcome, and supported, and where health and well-being are part of our culture. Yesterday, for example, there were shovels in the ground for the official groundbreaking of our Student Recreation and Wellness Center. We know that health and wellness are inextricably linked to the success of our students. This wonderful new center will enable that success, support students' overall well-being, and provide opportunities to connect with one another through recreation. Thank you to all of our students who advocated for this facility, and thank you to the board and community members who joined us yesterday as we work together to empower students to lead well-balanced lives. Another MSU placemaking initiative that improves our health took place earlier this week when we joined the Gilbert Family Foundation, Henry Ford Health, and the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Detroit to announce a new physical and rehabilitation facility and a revolutionary neurofibromatosis research institute inside the new Henry Ford Health plus MSU Health Sciences Research Facility. Partnerships like this remind me of a question I often ask. What can we uniquely do together that we cannot do apart? Quite simply, I believe that conjoining the strengths of world-class academia, clinical research, and healthcare allows us to climb the highest medical mountains. And together, we will enable Detroit and all of Michigan as a place for groundbreaking research and patient care. Last week, we celebrated a gift from a generous corporate partner, Stellantis, of a Chrysler Pacifica minivan on behalf of ASMSU's SafeRide Transportation Service. Summoned with an app, MSU SafeRide offers students a free alternative to walking alone to campus buildings after dark. This really illustrates the power of Spartan collaborations, and we are grateful to the company for its gift to ASMSU and to ASMSU for operating the service. As we continue to link arms to enable a safe environment, the instances of gun violence on campuses and in communities across the country in just the last few weeks are really disheartening. Spartans understand the pain these incidents inflict on a community, and I've offered our support to other affected institutions. We also continue to remind our students, faculty, and staff of the mental health support resources that we have available. Just this week, as we do at the start of each semester, we tested our mass notification system. To receive alerts, we encourage our campus community and our neighbors to visit alert.msu.edu, as well as download the Safe MSU app and enable push notifications. Infrastructure planning and facilities is continuing work installing new locks on hundreds of classrooms and teaching lab doors. Nearly two-thirds of the planned installations have been made, allowing the doors to be locked from the inside while allowing access to emergency personnel. This semester, we expect to complete a new security operations center to consolidate campus systems and provide 24-hour coverage. The Department of Police and Public Safety is also continuing to develop an active violence training program that will be available to students, faculty, and staff on MSU's Ability LMS training platform. We have an amazing year in front of us with so many people working to ensure the safety, success, and well-being of everyone who attends, works, and visits MSU. This commitment to excellence reminds me of the words of another speaker at our fall convocation, Shishil Varma, who is president of our International Students Association. He said this, "Being a Spartan is more than just a title. It is a commitment to inclusion, commitment to unity, and a commitment to excellence." Wonderfully said. And I might add, Spartans are also committed to the arts and creative culture worthy of a great university that Cliff Wharton once envisioned. That work starts with us, so let's turn now to the remainder of today's agenda. I call on the Board Secretary Fletcher for public participation on items germane to the agenda.
Thank you, Interim President Woodruff. If there are no public participants with items that are germane to the action agenda today.
Thank you. I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, Mr. Grant, to present the gift, grant, and contract report.
Thank you, President Woodruff. Chairperson Vassar, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is May 25th, 2023 through August 9th, 2023. The total value for this period is $182,790,077.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
So moved.
Support.
Is there a second? Any discussion?
Yeah, we did get a second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to present the research presentation.
Thank you. So I'm excited to introduce a very special presentation today, and as the President alluded to earlier, there are a number of changes in this room that you've noticed already. And our speaker today will enlighten us on this program and really provide an update on the overall arts initiative outlined in the university's strategic plan. The initiative aims to integrate the arts into our educational experience, our research activities, our outreach, and our university culture. Our speaker, Dr. Judith Stoddard, serves as Vice Provost for the University Arts and Collections. She is responsible for supporting those units across campus that hold significant cultural and intellectual collections that serve the research, scholarship, and outreach missions of the university, including the Beale Botanical Gardens, MSU Broad Museum, MSU Museum, and the Wharton Center. She also serves as coordinator for the Comprehensive Campus-Wide Arts Strategy. Prior to her appointment in this role, Dr. Stoddard served as a senior associate dean in the MSU Graduate School from 2017 to 2022, interim associate provost for graduate education, and dean in the graduate school from 2015 to 2017. She is an impressive scholar and administrator, recognized nationally for her leadership in graduate education, and she remains a faculty member in the Department of English. Please, her full bio is in your packet, and you can see more impressive accomplishments that she has achieved. So let me please welcome my colleague, Dr. Judith Stoddard.
Vice President Gage, Interim President Woodruff, Chairperson Vassar, and members of the Board of Trustees, thank you for inviting me here to talk about efforts that celebrate the vitality of the arts at Michigan State University. One is visible around you, a new art installation in the boardroom. This is the first in a planned annual rotation of works that will pay tribute to the creativity and innovation of MSU faculty and student artists. I'm especially pleased that we can inaugurate this effort by celebrating the legacy of MSU President Clifton R. Wharton and Dr. Dolores Wharton, whose impact on the arts here helped to shape MSU's distinctive profile as a vibrant research, land grant, and global university. Many of you will be familiar with the building pictured in this slide, our Center for Performing Arts, that bears their name. Many of you will be less familiar with the part they played in supporting, promoting, and displaying the creative works of faculty both in their time on campus and in their residences in New York in later years. Dolores Wharton was finishing a groundbreaking book on contemporary Malaysian art when she came to MSU. Soon after they arrived, President Gerald Ford appointed her to the National Council on the Arts. For her, the arts provide an important lens on a time and a place. In a clip from a 1971 interview, we can hear directly from her why exhibiting faculty art in Cowles House was so important to them.
From the time I came to Michigan State University and moved into Cowles House, Dr. and Mrs. Clifton R. Wharton Jr. expressed interest in having works by faculty artists in their new home. Dr. and Mrs. Wharton have deep feelings about art and the need for it in their environment. They have an art collection gathered in this country and abroad. In addition, Mrs. Wharton is author of a book on contemporary Malaysian art. Cowles House is a home, first and foremost, so careful attention goes into the proper placement and the hanging of the art. Mrs. Wharton believes strongly that art and residence must exist in harmony, producing an aesthetic statement which is both personal and pleasing.
I would like to say what great pleasure I am receiving from having the faculty art in Cowles House. I should perhaps explain that my first impetus in viewing art is to discover what is being produced in a foreign country, foreign to me, or new community. And as you know, my husband and I have lived abroad and we have traveled to many different countries, and viewing the art has always been my way of becoming acquainted with a new situation. I find the art being produced by the faculty, your art faculty, to be extremely provocative. It has given me richer insights into the university and certainly a deeper appreciation. We have quite a number of guests coming to Cowles House, and this is the main reason for having the faculty art here, is to show it in a home, a natural setting, and also to give greater prominence to the superb standard of excellence which is obtained by the art faculty.
The Whartons purchased for their own collection several of the pieces they exhibited in Cowles House. In 2020, they presented these works as a gift to the MSU Broad Art Museum so that they could come home, as Dolores Wharton put it at the time. Three of these works have come home in another sense. They're now installed again in Cowles House. Many of the others are on display in this room. This seems especially fitting in the case of the Jens Plum Still Life, which is back there in the corner, a gift from the MSU Board of Trustees to the Whartons on the occasion of President Wharton's retirement in 1978. Later in that 1971 interview, President Wharton remarks on the impact faculty artists had beyond campus, enriching and empowering people across the state through outreach and through training the next generation of educators. One such artist represented in the Wharton's collection is sculptor Robert Weil, pictured here in a 1969 news clipping, working with young people from his native Detroit. And he's represented in this room by a sculpture behind the front table there. Weil saw the arts as a bridge to higher education for youth who did not see themselves there. As he is quoted as saying in the article, art can reclaim human resources. From being able to create, students learn that they have power. The works from the Wharton's collection are joined by representative pieces from artists who also had a significant footprint beyond their individual creative practice, Emma Goetsch and Catherine Winkler. They were among the few women artists and faculty at MSU in 1920. Each was dedicated to making the arts accessible to all through integrating it into public education. To that end, they organized the Michigan Art Education Association. They also influenced the work of Frank Lloyd Wright, collaborating closely with him on the design of one of his earliest Usonian homes, built in 1940 in Okemos and still standing and lived in today. To continue this legacy of celebrating and supporting the arts, I'm pleased to announce that this week, the university launched an intentional unified presence for the arts on campus. Arts MSU amplifies our strengths in the arts through a cohesive vision and identity. This identity comes to life through a dedicated website that invites engagement with the full range of arts activities happening all around us. The development of a shared presence for the arts is a critical step in the campus-wide arts strategy, which is part of the MSU 2030 strategic plan. The strategy embeds the arts across MSU's missions to catalyze discoveries and experiences at the intersection of disciplines, ideas, and perspectives. The website makes visible initiatives that join the critical and the creative in ways that drive the kind of experimentation and innovation that are foundational to who we are as a university. So I invite you to learn about things like a new collaboration with EFRIB, collaborations around food sustainability and sciences, ecological restoration, and sports and social justice. And the website animates the impact of MSU's arts here and across the state of Michigan, including sustained engagements with youth and educators in Lansing, Detroit, and Flint, through dynamic storytelling that we hope will make you feel proud to be a part of this remarkable campus arts community. You can find it at the easy-to-remember URL, arts.msu.edu. The Whartons have been strong advocates for the arts in this place because they believe the arts are fundamental to building and sustaining a vibrant community. As we continue to act on that belief, I would like to give President Wharton the last word on what the arts mean here in a brief excerpt from a speech he delivered at the Wharton Center's opening in 1982.
During the years when we labored hard to try to push this vision forward, we had the supreme confidence that we could rely upon that marvelous Spartan spirit, that sense of can-do, because we knew that you were committed to Michigan State University as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, land-grant university in this country. And you wanted to be certain that in every single field, as a people's university, you would strive for excellence in every single area. And this facility, which is in fact an instrument for the arts, is one expression of that striving of Spartans everywhere in this area.
Thank you very much for your time today, and I'd like to briefly recognize Stephen Bridges, the interim director of the MSU Broad Art Museum, who pulled together this wonderful collection of works in the boardroom today, and also people who are often unthanked, members of Dan Bowman's crew, Monty Pride, and his amazing IPF crew, who were able to transform this room and make this installation happen. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Vice Provost Stoddard. I now call upon Interim Provost Yaitsko to present the personnel actions and information reports.
Thank you, Interim President Woodruff. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the September 2023 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments: Crystal Van Kooten, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and American Cultures, with tenure effective August 16, 2023. Chad Cotty, PhD, Chairperson and Professor, Department of Agricultural, Food, and Resource Economics, with tenure effective August 1, 2023. Kwe Shea, PhD, Red Cedar Professor, Department of Counseling, Educational Psychology, and Special Education, with tenure effective July 1, 2023. Lucas Pozo Miller, PhD, Professor, Department of Pediatrics and Human Development, with tenure effective December 1, 2023. Charles Hong, PhD, Chairperson and Professor, Department of Medicine, with tenure effective September 8, 2023. Mary Davis Ajami, PhD, Associate Dean and Professor, College of Nursing, with tenure effective September 9, 2023. Kakan Day, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering, with tenure effective January 1, 2024. Guchen Vivian Chow, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Statistics and Probability, with tenure effective August 16, 2023. I'm pleased to recommend Neil Romanowski, MLIS, PhD, Librarian 3 and Dean, Libraries, with continuing status, effective September 11, 2023. And I'm also pleased to recommend Glenn Chambers, Jr., PhD, Associate Dean, Honors College, for a change in title to Interim Dean, Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, effective August 7, 2023. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Thank you, Interim Provost Yaitsko. Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. I'd now like to move to the committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Vassar will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, Interim President Woodruff. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Mary D. Sist DVM Scholarship Fund to provide scholarship support for students in the College of Veterinarian Medicine.
We have a motion. Is there support?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. I now call upon Trustee Rima Vassar to present the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
So bear with me. This is not my report. Trustee Deno is, as you can see, is absent today. He's not feeling well, so we're hoping for a speedy recovery for him. And in his stead, I am the one to bring his report. So as the stand-in for the chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to the Board of Trustees bylaws as indicated in Attachment A. Be it further resolved that the Board authorizes the Secretary and Chief of Staff to the Board to update numbering and naming references and policies and other documents where provisions of the bylaws appear or otherwise cited.
Do I have support?
Support.
Does anyone have any, oh yeah, Chair, oh, I don't have anything to discuss. It okay. says that I'm available, but I'm not. So I'm not available to discuss, but Dr. Fletcher.
Good morning, everyone. You know, the sort of attachment before the board for consideration, as many of you know, the board bylaws have not been substantively revised since, I think, 2003. There are various sort of cleanup elements related to the bylaws. Indeed, removing sort of changing and reflecting the university's current organizational structure, incorporating a board policy related to student liaisons and updating titles and references with respect to our student liaisons as well, and several other sort of adjustments and cleanup items that have been presented for discussion and consideration. Again, the bylaws have not been updated in a while, and as part of the board's practices, really should engage in those updates.
Thank you. This motion has been properly made, supported, and I now call for the vote.
No.
I move to amend.
Oh. Okay. No
further discussion. We have an amendment to the motion.
I move that we amend the motion by further revising Article 4 of the Board's bylaws as set forth in Attachment B, which has been provided to the Board as set forth in Attachment B before you and effective starting January 1st, 2025. The Board would select the roles of Chair and Vice Chair based on seniority for 1 year in terms in those roles, amongst other things, and is further set forth in Attachment B, Article 4, would be revised to provide that the vice chair would automatically succeed to the role of chair unless the person forfeits it. If there are two trustees with equal seniority, a random selection process would occur to choose the trustee for the position and specify the process whereby the chair or vice chair could be removed.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Is there a second to the motion to amend the main motion to adopt the revised bylaws as set forth in Attachment B?
So moved.
Any further discussion?
So I, just to make this more
Trustee
confusing.
Teve.
Is there a way that we can amend the third paragraph of the Attachment B, which, sorry, there isn't anything for this. It is the sentence that reads, if the vice chair elects to not serve as chair or the board member next eligible to serve as vice chair elects not to serve, then he or she forfeits the opportunity to serve as chair or vice chair until all members of the board have served in such capacity or forfeited the opportunity to serve. That section, is there a way that we could change it so that if someone forfeited their year that they would necessarily be up for chair, that they would have first right of refusal the next year? Because as we have things going on in our lives, if someone couldn't do it that year, that they could then do another year.
So, yes, that was discussed. I believe, did you want to say something,
no,
Stephen?
No,
okay,
say
that was discussed and agreed to yesterday, I think, at the recommendation of our vice chair, that we do it based on seniority so that they are not moved to the back of the pack. So
yes,
with that revision, then I would ask for a support.
So the revision will be that, if I understood that correctly, that if someone forfeits, following that forfeit, they have the first right of removal, first right of refusal. So
yes.
With that amendment, do I have support for the Attachment B?
Support.
Any further discussion? I'd like to vote on the amended Attachment B, and we'll do that by roll call.
Chair Vassar?
Oh, sorry. Did it. I did. I just asked for discussion on the amendment.
I'm sorry.
What did you want to discuss first?
Actually, I did, because I am going to vote no on the amendment, primarily because it sets up a situation where we have an automatic chair. It's my belief that the board should actually elect a chair on a regular basis. This is a close call. We've talked endlessly about the pros and the cons, and there's definitely pros and cons. But in my mind, I think the board should decide who their chair is, and so I'm going to vote no.
And you're voting no on the amendment?
On the amendment, yes.
The next vote is on the bylaws A.
Bylaws A will follow amendment.
Correct.
Okay. So this is for the amendment that was... Okay.
Yeah, it's for discussion on... This is a roll call vote on the amendment.
On the amendment. Any further discussion? Secretary, please call the roll.
I've got an alphabetical order. Trustee Byram?
Yes.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson?
Yes.
Trustee Kelly?
No.
Trustee Pierce?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tebay?
Yes.
Trustee Vassar?
No.
That makes 5-2, the amendment would pass.
So Amendment B Amendment B to the bylaws, the original bylaw, attachment A, passed. We now call for, so we completed discussion on Amendment A. Any further discussion on Amendment A as amended with I can't do this.
I know.
Amended
with I know.
B.
I know.
I can do it.
I know.
Attachment A with Amendment B.
With
so
the amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, I call for the Secretary to please call a roll call vote.
So we are voting, just for clarification, on
attachment A
with
the
amendment
B.
As amendment.
Correct. As amendment. As amendment.
Correct. I will follow the same order. Trustee Byram.
Yes.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Yes.
Trustee Kelly.
Yes.
Trustee Pierce.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Tebay.
Yes.
Trustee Vassar.
Abstain.
That makes 6 voting in favor with 1 abstention. The motion passes.
The motion passes. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, yes, on me. As the stand-in for the chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the renumbering of the current Board of Trustees policy manual, including the incorporation of provisions of the Board of Trustees bylaws as enclosed with this resolution, attachment A, with all of its amendments. Be it further resolved that the board authorizes the secretary and chief of staff to the board to update numbering and naming references to policies and to make other technical amendments to policy titles or substance as enclosed with this resolution, attachment A, as amended. Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the adoption of a standard policy template for Board of Trustees policies for use with immediate effect when revising or developing Board of Trustees policies. And be it finally resolved that the Board of Trustees directs the Secretary to work with the university stakeholders to ensure that the revised policy structure is communicated and implemented as soon as practicable after passage of this resolution.
Thank you. We have a motion on restructuring of board policies. Do I have support?
Support.
Any discussion?
Maybe Stefan could give up.
The brief part of context here, the board policy manual, its current numbering structure dates back to 1984. It really should be updated to conform to better practices with respect to policy management, including the adoption of a standard policy template moving forward for accessibility of users, for consistency of just obtaining information. Also included, I think, were several actions on obsolete policies, redundant policy actions, as well as retitling some policies as well to reflect current nomenclature. So,
thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any additional discussion?
I would just make the comment that this is part of the board's ongoing governance work,
and it's a long process, and I'm very grateful for the work that our board secretary, chief of staff, Stephen Fletcher, has done on this. It's been a priority of the board for a long time, and it's been a very heavy lift. So this is indeed positive in its progress.
It only took 40 years, but
predated all of us around this table.
I'd like to just echo.
Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I'd like to echo Trustee Byram. Since I've been on this board, this has been an active request of most of the trustees that we dive into this and get this done. So I'm very grateful to you, Stephen. I know that you probably got bags under your eyes dealing with all of our changes, but I certainly think that it meets with what we feel are best governing practices moving forward. So thank you.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, not to pile on, but I also just want to say, since I joined the board in 2019, this was something that we were working on. It's been a very long time coming. We've all put a lot of time and thought into it, but no one more than you, Secretary Fletcher. So thank you for your work on it.
So with that, here we go. His work not yet done. I call upon the secretary to call a roll call vote. Please call the roll.
Trustee Byram.
Yes.
Trustee Deno, obviously not here. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Yes.
Trustee Kelly.
Yes.
Trustee Pierce.
Yes.
Trustee Scott. Trustee Scott.
Oh, see, she was talking to me.
This is what happens when you sit next to Trustee Byram.
Yes.
Trustee Tebe.
Yes.
And Trustee Vassa.
Yes.
The vote is 7-0.
Can we clap now?
The motion on restructuring the board policy passes.
So for the next item, I'm going to ask Trustee Tebe to present.
Thank you, Chair Besser. I move that the board hereby amends University Ordinance 18.00, Firearms or Weapons, as shown in Exhibit A hereto attached.
Thank you. Do I have support?
Support.
Support. Any discussion?
I would just like to note that this has been a long time coming for me personally. I have been bringing this issue to the board since March of 2019, when the Students Against Gun Violence reached out to me and started educating me on this policy. I want to sort of give them credit for this. They're the ones that brought this ordinance to me and have subsequently continued to engage and educate us on why it was important to change this ordinance. And I think, obviously, after what happened on February 13th, it was even more important that we do this, but I wanted to note that this has been happening for this many years, and it wasn't just because of what happened in February 13th. And so I just want to, again, thank the Students Against Gun Violence for bringing this to me.
Thank you, Trustee Tebe. Vice Chair Kelly?
Yeah, a couple of comments. I'm not supporting the amendment, so let me explain why. First of all, this board's given an extraordinary authority to actually pass criminal laws. This isn't an increase of a parking ticket. This is actually putting people in jail, because that's the effect of passing this law. And there's no doubt that the amendment puts law-abiding people in jail. If you're breaking laws on the campus or any property under the control of the board, you can be charged criminally. This law applies to only, and I say only, law-abiding people. The current ordinance reads, except as permitted by state law regulating firearms, no person shall possess a firearm or weapon anywhere upon property governed by the board. Now, all we're doing is excluding except as permitted by state law. That's effectively what we're doing here. So I don't say that I have any greater authority than anybody on this board, and maybe lawyers should not pass legislation. I think it should be left to citizens. But I can't exclude the fact that for 30 years I've been writing ordinances. And when I read an ordinance like that, a couple of red flags pop up. First of all, what's the problem that we're trying to fix here? This was not brought to us by law enforcement. Law enforcement has not come to this board and said, we need an ordinance dealing with carrying a concealed weapon on campus property because we have an outbreak of problems with regard to that. We don't. I've seen no evidence that that's the case. I've seen no police report that would suggest to me that we need a new law or that we should be basically imprisoning, and I don't want to overstate it, but at some point somebody is going to be charged with this law and go to jail over this law. And that's the power that this board has. And when we have that power, there's a higher level of scrutiny, in my mind, that we have to apply to it. So I don't see the problem. Even though I'm sensitive to the fact that students, faculty, and other people on this campus are uncomfortable, and I don't want to say fearful, but uncomfortable that somebody on campus may have a concealed weapon. But that's state law. And if you want to change state law, then change state law. So I don't see the problem, and I don't believe that passing this will have any impact on the safety of this campus. Number two, I don't like passing laws based upon jurisdictional boundaries. And what I mean by that is you're on one side of the street, you're legal, you cross the street, you're illegal. And that's what we're doing here, because only with regard to property of the university is this illegal. Everywhere else in the state, it's legal. And that's a problem to me, just as a lawyer who has passed a lot of ordinances. Third, we are putting a lot of discretion into our police officers. That's a bad idea. That's bad legislation when you do that. Police officers don't like it. Prosecutors don't like it. The general counsel, I haven't asked Brian about this, probably doesn't like it. And the fact of the matter is, I want you to think about a police officer encountering somebody with a concealed weapon permit in one of our open spaces on campus, because it's already illegal in dorms, buildings, and other places on campus. So what we're talking about here are open spaces on campus. The person with that legal weapon is required to notify the police officer that they have a concealed weapon. Immediately, that person has admitted to a felony. Now, you're asking the police officer now to make the decision if that person is a father or a mother with three little kids, do I arrest them? And we know what the answer to that is likely, because we're giving the police officers not only the discretion but the obligation to make that decision. And then I ask you, if 3 o'clock in the morning the same incident happens with somebody that police officer subjectively decides is suspicious, does that person get arrested? And that's what's going to happen in this case. There's going to be people that will not be arrested and people that will be arrested, and it won't be based upon this language. It will be based upon whether or not the police officer believes they're suspicious. That's a bad law. Finally, we are passing this ordinance to apply to all property under the control of this board. That's not just campus. This university owns property across this state, from the UP on down to southern the state of Michigan, where the norms in those areas are completely different than what might exist here in East Lansing. And again, we are making people subject to felony charges if they're arrested under this, and we're effectively putting them in jail. And if we're not putting anybody in jail, then why are we doing this? So it's bad legislation. I understand that it may be perceived as an added level of safety, and it's not. So I'm not supporting it.
Other discussion?
I just wanted to BP Lynch. I don't need you to respond to anything, but I just wondered if you had anything you wanted to say just about the ordinance. If not, it's fine. I meant to do you first and not after we spoke. So,
good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Trustee Tebe did bring this to the attention when I arrived in April of 21, that this was something that had been brought forward by a student organization with that. At the time, the ordinance itself had been discussed with the local prosecutor's office at the time when the ordinance was written. The prosecutor at the time stated that they would not enforce or support charges that were written on that particular ordinance with that. Coming forward with it, we've had additional discussion with the current prosecutor, and the office stated that they would review those charges in the same manner as they would any other charges that are brought before them, based on the facts and the circumstances that are associated with it. As the current, as Trustee Kelly stated, the additional components to the ordinance would extend to the open fields that we currently have. Those decisions would be made by our officers in the field at that time. There are several circumstances that our officers deal with on a daily basis to where discretion comes into play. That's all part of what they do. Those are all the considerations that the prosecutor's office do as well. This would be other institutions in the state have similar ordinances that cover and have made those adjustments. There was also some current court decisions involving the University of Michigan, and in a similar circumstance, the court at the time upheld in favor of the University of Michigan. These are tough decisions with that, and our officers do that on a daily basis, and they do a very good job of doing it. And the examples that were given as possibilities are true and accurate, and we're going to have to deal with them. And we'll continue to deal with them as fair as possible and based on the circumstances with that. These are real-time decisions and circumstances that are being dealt with regularly here on campus, on and off.
Prosecuting attorney, at the time of the initial conversation, you said would basically not look at this as something that they should take as seriously if someone comes. You're saying the current prosecuting attorney has said what on this issue?
Case by case.
So historically, when this was initially brought years ago, the prosecuting attorney at the time said that they would not support the charges. Today's prosecutor in Ingham County Prosecutor's Office, when advised that this was a possible amendment for our ordinance, stated that they would review the charges for this particular ordinance as they do for every other criminal offense that is brought before them. They'd review it based on the facts and circumstances that are presented for that particular incident.
Thank you so much for explaining the discretion. So as a former prosecutor, I had this conversation with you when we were on a, I believe, phone call concerning the fact that the whole justice system, the legal system, is a system of discretion at almost every level, from law enforcement to, as you indicated, the prosecutor who sits and determines based on a report whether or not to issue charges, through to the judge who, if a person is found guilty, determining within their discretion how they're going to sentence an individual. I believe that we can all understand the concern as it relates to stereotyping and the types of things that marginalized or minority communities have to deal with. And so my question to you as a trustee is whether or not you feel your department has the sufficient training on implicit biases in order to hopefully negate the occurrences of these type of arbitrary issues. And secondarily, I believe I asked you on that phone call whether or not it's true that, in fact, it would likely be secondary to another type of stop, meaning a person drunk driving, then it just so happens the officer asked the person, because as a CCW carrier, which I am one, it's only at a traffic stop that you have to disclose. So that would mean that I've done something that would then precipitate that need for the answer to that officer that I am carrying at that time. So if you could just address those two things, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. In regards to the question of training for our officers, yes, our officers do go through several different training opportunities dealing with biases, whether it's implicit, based on race, gender, ethnicity, or other biases as well. So that is part of the annual in-service training that our officers receive. They receive that from internal instructors as well as our university experts in those areas, and we do at some point sometimes contract out as well for that training to actually occur. Okay. In regards to what we have seen, in regards to when we do encounter someone that has a concealed pistol license, in most cases it does, it is in association with another incident. So you're correct. If it is a traffic stop and that's part of it, yes. If the officer encounters them, they're called maybe for a domestic circumstance. Mm-hmm. It's been on a rare occasion to where it's solely regarding carrying the weapon itself.
Because it's supposed to be concealed, so you wouldn't even know, right?
It's still circumstantial with
right.
it. So,
okay.
But in most gotcha. Cases, it does accompany some other incident okay. that has occurred.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So I do want to commend you and your department. I have had nothing but positive experiences with all of your officers. They have been caring and considerate and kind and accommodating in so many ways. I still believe, though, that training is good, mm-hmm. right? But all of us have biases. Every single person in this room has biases, and we can't all know them at any given moment, and no amount of training until we die, I think, will alleviate or eliminate all biases. So I don't have any disparaging, you know, comments on regarding your officers, but in relationship to what Vice Chair Kelly said, as much as possible, we should try to take discretion out of these ordinances because we do know that folks have biases. But I want to commend you and your work and your department.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
You can have a seat, but I do have one more thing to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is a tough ordinance in that I want all students to feel safe. I want all faculty to feel safe, all staff, all Spartans who come to this campus to feel safe. And I do know that gun laws do help in a perception of safety and feeling safe. And there have been times where my experiences with police officers have not been safe, not on this campus, but outside of this campus. And thinking about what happened last month to the little baby who was taking out the trash, we do know that discretion has an issue with police, right? We do know that we have certain populations who are policed in different ways. So while I really want to say yes to this ordinance, because I want everyone to feel, if you don't know anything about me, I want people to feel well and to be rested and to feel like they can be comfortable in their own space, to feel like they belong and this is their community. And I also cannot ignore that we would be putting folks in harm's way. If there is a routine traffic stop, you do have to say, I'm admitting to a felony because I have the CCW, if I'm on the other side of the street. I don't think that that's responsible legislation.
Thank you.
I do have one more comment.
Trustee Scott.
I forgot to ask, but that's a very good point. I recall that there was conversation that we would indeed have signs everywhere, like there is going to be clear demarcations that you're entering into a gun-free zone. Correct.
There will be signage on campus.
In the thoroughfares, mm-hmm. the street
the
coming
spaces.
Into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott.
I do want to note that on Jolly Road, there's actually a gun range,
which is excluded.
But if you're traveling on that road,
and the roads are not included.
They're not
it's
included.
Only green space. It's only green space,
correct.
Not roads.
The chair will recognize the student liaison, Hannah Jeffrey. You may.
I would like to personally ask whether, and perhaps
okay. You have to go the other way, Hannah.
It's okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can do.
I would just like to personally ask, and perhaps this is a better question for Chief Lynch, does anyone think that the passage of this particular amendment would have resulted in the lives of three Michigan State University students still being here today?
Mm, that's a good question.
I think you did the right thing.
So the person that was responsible for that act had not been contacted by any law enforcement prior to committing it. So we would not have had a situation in regards to it. From my understanding as well, that person did not have a concealed pistol license either. So by being in possession of it would have been a criminal offense in itself.
Thank you, Chief Lynch. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I ask the Secretary to call a roll call vote.
Trustee Byram.
Yes.
Trustee Kanacki Jefferson.
Yes.
Trustee Kelly.
No.
Trustee Pierce.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Tebay.
Yes.
Trustee Bassa.
No.
The vote is 5-2. The amendment of Ordinance 18 is approved.
Thank you. Interim President, would you like to make a comment?
Thank you, Trustee Tebay. Until today, all students and faculty, 14,000 employees and 50,000 students, were not allowed to carry concealed weapons anywhere on our campus. Today, we close a loophole so that members of the community cannot carry a concealed weapon on our green spaces. Our campus is home to 17,000 residents, swelling to 60,000 during the weekday and over 110,000 on the weekends. We pay close attention to the concerns of our students, employees, and our community members who have shared consistently over the years that they would feel more safe with this ordinance. This is, after all, their front and back yards. They deserve to feel safe here. They deserve to have a safe and welcoming campus. This action today is another step in our commitment to safety. Thank you very much to the Board of Trustees.
Are we voting? We are voting. This concludes my report. Or Trustee Denno's report.
Yeah.
No, thank you. This concludes Trustee Denno's report.
I now call upon Trustee Dan Kelly to present the report from the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following. A sponsored research agreement with ISO Therapeutics, Inc., a service agreement with Drawbridge, Inc., a service agreement with David Lauren Photographic, a service agreement with Leetronics, Inc., a service agreement with Dr. Chi Chang, doing business as Quant Quest, and an independent contractor agreement with Dr. Richard E. Sherman.
Thank you. Do we have support?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstained? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
I call upon Trustee Kelly Tebay to present the Committee on Student Life and Culture.
Thank you, President Woodruff. I will now have Senior VP Benny Gore and Provost Yasko to do the launch of the academic year.
Oh, I guess I'm first. I would like to just announce that we had a great fall welcome. In my 16 years here, I think this was the best. We moved in 16,000 students into the residence halls, had great participation from students and community members through all of our activities. 16,000 people at participation, 11,000 at convocation. So all the events were widely attended. At the colloquiums, there were students showing up early to the School of Business and Engineering. So, you know, I think this was a collective effort from the faculty to the colleges to the staff. So I'd like to thank them and welcome our students to campus. So this is the engagement by numbers for you and the audience to see.
Great.
Provost?
Thank you. I would love to echo the remarks. I think this was one of our greatest fall beginnings. It felt really nice, and it echoes not just in all the bodies and smiles that you see around here, but the whole atmosphere. So I'd like to fill that out a little bit with numbers. Our numbers change still on a daily basis. We're a very large campus. The numbers that I have for you are from September 6th. Right now, our total enrollment exceeds our enrollment of last fall. We have over 51,000 students on campus right now. This would be our largest class ever, but for the decision to include all of our law students going back historically as well. And otherwise, we would be the largest. We are the largest undergraduate population that we've ever been here at MSU with over 40,000 students. The graduate enrollment is relatively stable compared to where we were last fall. And that's well over 7,000, approaching 8,000 students. And our professional enrollment across our medical schools and the law school is also comparable to last year with a little bit over 3,000. Students come from all over the world. We are a world-class university. In fact, we have students from 133 countries across the world. And we have students across from all 50 states, and including the District of Columbia, I believe. In addition to that, we have students from all 83 Michigan counties. Our top three counties are Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb. The top three states outside of Michigan are Illinois, California, and Ohio. And the top three countries outside the U.S. are China, India, and the Republic of Korea. We are growing in terms of diversity on our campus as well. Over 27% of our domestic students come from minoritized backgrounds, with over 4,000 Asian students, over 3,200 Hispanic and Latine students, as well as African American and Black students, also in that order, and over 2,000 students who identify with two or more races. This is a very rapidly growing area on our campus. When we look at this, our total enrollment across colleges, our biggest colleges are College of Business, with enrollment close to 8,000 students, Social Science and Engineering in excess of 7,000 students, and Natural Sciences in excess of 6,000 students. If I focus specifically on bachelor degree-seeking enrollment students, so taking out undergraduates who are not pursuing a bachelor's degree and our graduate and professional students, we have larger numbers in the incoming classes than we do in our more advanced classes. I'll show you a slide on that in a minute. You'll see that 28.4% of our students are freshmen, and when you compare that to the previous term, you see that we're stable in those areas. Most of our students who are full-time enrolled in this category are around or between 14 and 15 credit hours on average. That's right in the middle of where our block tuition is. Here's a graphic to show you a little bit what our incoming class sizes are. The purple pillars on the right-hand side are the current year, where we are in these different areas, and the three clusters differentiate between first-year students, sophomore, junior, and senior students. And as you see, we have very large incoming classes, and we have smaller, more advanced classes. So this speaks to our student body also growing over time as we're admitting into MSU larger numbers of students than those that are leaving. Focusing specifically at the incoming undergraduate class, so everything I've been talking about was focused largely on the entire student body. We'll be close to 11,000 new undergraduate students across the first time in any college and transfer students we have. We have well over 9,000 first-time students and over 1,500 transfer students. This cohort includes over 600 honor students, and I expect that number might also still increase a little bit. We have 27.6% students of color in the incoming class. Again, that's slightly above what our overall student population number is and is showing towards a shift in demographics here at the university. When we look at where we're coming from now, it is in this particular class, we have students from 86 different countries across 45 different states and 80 of our 83 Michigan counties. Again, our leading counties are Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb. And the states that we draw the most from outside of Michigan are Illinois, Ohio, and California. And notice here we have a bit of a reversal in the incoming class in that when we look at our international students, the largest cohort now comes from India, whereas the current population on our campus, the largest one is from China. China comes in second in our incoming class. And Vietnam is the third largest draw, displacing where we had the Republic of Korea in terms of our overall enrollment. Let me leave it at that and echo again at the what I said at the beginning and echo what Vinny had. It's a very, very exciting feeling here on campus. This was a great new cohort to visit, a great return of all of our existing students, and we're in business again. Thanks.
Thank you. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Tebe, and thank you, Senior Vice President Gore and Interim Provost Yitzko. I now call upon Board Secretary Fletcher to invite public participation.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We will now proceed to the public participation on other items not germane to the agenda part of our meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We will now hear from Samantha Barony, followed by Mike Bottom. Samantha, are you here?
I am.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you, Interim President Woodruff and the Board of Trustees. It's great to be with you. My name is Samantha Barony. I'm the Executive Director of the College Swimming and Diving Coaches Association of America. I've been with the association for nearly 5 years. Prior to that, I was an Associate Commissioner at a Division I conference, and prior to that, I was about 10 years on a college campus as a Division I coach. And so I'm here today to talk to you about the possible reinstatement of your swimming and diving program. I have 4 quick points. And then I will move it over to my colleague, Mike Bottom. First, the students you will bring on to campus. So swimmers and divers generally outpace their peers in the classroom, and you will be enrolling student athletes who traditionally graduate with higher test scores and GPAs. Once they're on campus, they generally graduate with at a higher rate than those at the student body, and that's across all universities. Once they launch into their careers, they generally like to stay invested and loyal to their undergraduate institutions, and they like to give back. And you guys are experiencing this right now. I know that. The athletics piece of bringing back a swimming and diving program. In college, swimming and diving is the home for the highest caliber swimmers and divers in the world. And Michigan State should be no exception. So once you reinstate the program, the expectation and confidence should be that you are competing with your peers at the Big Ten to recruit the best students out of Michigan, out of the United States, and globally. And then once they're back and they're representing Michigan State, they're doing it on the national and the international stage. And this is how you can brand Michigan State across the world. Your facility. I know you're getting ready to make some big decisions on your facilities. Please hear me when I say you can and will be competitive regardless of what bells and whistles you bring into this facility. Okay, you can compete for a national title. Not only that, you will be able to host U.S. and NCAA championship-style meets here on Michigan State. So that doesn't just bring eyes onto Michigan State's campus or into your athletic department, okay, but that brings dollars and cents into your East Lansing community and into the state of Michigan, and that's a real impact. And finally, I just want to talk quickly about saving a life. Drowning is the number one cause of death in kids ages 4 and under, according to the CDC. Michigan State Swimming and Diving can join hundreds of other Division I colleges across the country to get into their community and teach this life-saving skill to kids, adults on campus and in the community, okay? And you can impact change against this staggering statistic in a really positive way. Lastly, I just want to let you know that as the executive director of the College Swimming and Diving Coaches Association, that if you make this decision, we will employ all of our resources to help you launch this program in an intentional and a sustainable and a successful way into the future that Michigan State Swimming and Diving has never seen before. So I am here now. I am reachable at any point after the meeting or online or email or call me. I'm here and I'm available to you. Thank you.
Mike Bottom, followed by Melissa Hudditch.
I thought I was going to get her 15 seconds.
Oh, Mike.
Well, you know, here's the great thing about this. As a coach, I'm looking at the art. I'm really backing this breathing and then this competition here. So we got this thing going on here. Mike Bottom, been the coach at Michigan for 15 years. I flew here from... ASCA, which is the American Swim Coaching Association, presenting to them the latest and greatest in technology that I believe will change the sport. I'm here. I flew back here, and I'm going to fly back there to tell you that I believe that what you're doing here, building a great facility, and I think you could build the greatest facility in Michigan, what you can do here is change the sport. You can change swimming and diving because we can do it in a different way, right? because you have the opportunity to do something fresh. When you build something new, you have an opportunity to do something new. As a recruiter in the past, what I've done is looked at potential. Right? As a coach in the past, what I've done is stepped on campuses and fostered belief in potential that made it happen. At Michigan, we won a national title. Right? Before that, I was at a school called Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, who's won now 12 national titles. Before that, I was at a school called USC, which was my alma mater, who won a national title while I was there. And before that, at Auburn, who won a national title when I left, right after I left. The idea that I'm here, and I really do appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for having me, and thank you for not throwing anything at me. I'm here crossing the boundaries because I believe. I believe in Michigan State. I believe in what you can do here. I believe what you can do as a program. And I believe it to the extent is I'm retired. I just retired in August, which is, yeah, thank you. You want to get rid of me? So, but I do believe that to the point that I'm ready to commit to come here to help build a program just like the programs that I've stepped into in the past, that not only will be here to be a great light to the university, to the world, to shine on what this, I mean, this is awesome, by the way, to come in here and, Trustee Brimley, when you complimented, I felt the thanks, I felt the appreciation that went through this board. And that was really a neat experience as a coach to see that happen. And that's what we do as coaches. We do appreciate what happens here. And that appreciation flows out into the communities. It flows out into the world. And then MSU is looked at, you know, not as what happens in a tunnel, but what happens on the tower, right? What happens in with grace. Understanding that, you know, we are combined. Athletics, academics, and the discipline of both is such a wonderful thing. And I'm going to say, go Breen.
I'm glad you got that right. You stuttered there a little bit.
Mike, thank you. Thank you very much, Mike. We'll next hear from Melissa Hurch, followed by Angelica Martinez-McGee. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Hudes. I stand here today as a sister survivor to address the past and current board chairs on behalf of the 546 known victims of the man that you employed here for two decades. Diane Byram, as former chair, you said no one knew what was going on, yet patients had reported our perpetrator from the mid-90s. You said it was only one bad man. Yet, since 2018, when our perpetrator was sentenced, we've seen headline after headline about sex abusers on this campus. You said that there's nothing to see in the 6,000 documents that you fought so hard to keep hidden. Yet, how can we believe you when we know your track record on the truth? You've been a board member for 15 years and chair for 4. You wanted to leave a legacy. And you have. You've left an indelible mark on this university with your decisions. It's far worse off now than when it was before you were here. To quote shame expert Brené Brown, complicity is part of the culture here. Money and power trumps ethics. Accountability is dead. Control and fear are management tools. And there's a trail of devastation and pain. Diane, you have shown no compassion, have not shed one tear over the anguish your actions have caused. 1 in 4 women on this campus have reported they were sexually assaulted after enrolling here. You've done nothing to help. You should be ashamed. Rima Vassar, we had high hopes that a new chair would finally bring about change. It did seem like you may have tried to vote in April. We just want an explanation of what happened. you promised during your campaign all documents should be made public to promote healing, to repair the reputation of this institution. So I ask you to make a motion now, before this meeting adjourns, to repair the reputation of this institution by having an open public vote on whether to release the documents to the Attorney General's office for a complete investigation before the statute of limitations runs out. I now serve this lawsuit filed by a group of sister survivors and the parent group Posse on you, Diane Byram, and you, Rima Vassar. Only the truth heals. This has gone on long enough.
When we'll approach and accept service on behalf of the trustees mentioned in the board.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Angelica Martinez McGee, followed by Elizabeth Maurer via Zoom. Angelica, good morning.
Good morning. This message is for Brianna Scott and any board member who worships a promise-keeping God and has had the human experience of not keeping a promise. My name is Angelica Martinez McGee. I am a sister survivor and one of 546 survivors and one of those who signed this lawsuit. I will be speaking as a messenger on this path towards justice. We are here today to show two things: how this board has taken actions to hide its decisions, and how this board member, how board members have kept the public from hearing exactly where each of you stand on covering up for anyone on this campus who knew about the illegal actions of Larry Nassar. In 2018, Larry Nassar was convicted of possessing child pornography and was sentenced to 60 years in federal prison. Today, the year is 2023, and this board has taken no action to support victims on a path towards justice. Brianna Scott, you campaigned on a promise to help restore trust. You said to the media, to voters, and the sister survivors that you value transparency. You said that some trustees seem to lack empathy for survivors and that you understood our frustrations. We are sitting here today, many years later, looking at you, and we see the kind of person that you campaigned against. Here are two instances that describe who you are today. First, you obtained our votes, our support, and our trust, and you leveraged your experience in education as an assistant prosecutor, and you said you specifically supported victims of sexual assault. Then you worked with a group of my sisters on a committee with the goal of achieving an independent investigation into what happened on this campus. You made sure to make my sisters feel supported, and then you abandoned them. Does the person sitting here today reflect the work of a former assistant prosecutor who supports sexual assault victims? The loss of your support cost us the truth and that you said you valued. I hope today you act, not for us, but so that you can recognize yourself again. Do you remember saying you were going to be a change agent? This is what it looks like. This is the moment you can be an agent for change or a change agent. Just make the vote today. One day we're all going to meet God, and I just want you to take a moment to think about what you're going to say to him when you meet the promise keeper. I yield my time.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next speaker is Elizabeth Maurer. Attorney Quinn will approach and accept service on behalf of the trustee board.
My apologies.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Elizabeth Maurer via Zoom, followed by Jennifer Hayes. Elizabeth, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can, Elizabeth. Good morning and welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Maurer. I'm here to speak for my 10-year-old self and her healing. But I'm also here to address two of the newest members of the board and two who have been the quietest. Sandy Pierce, you were appointed to this board by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a survivor of sexual violence. I believe that she thought that as a woman, a mother, a grandmother, you would bring compassion and understanding to the role in addition to your leadership skills. You've now been here for 9 months, and we are still waiting. Membership on this board is not a ceremonial role or a resume builder. You must have known that coming onto the board. As an executive manager, do you have the skills to bring others together and lead, or will you waffle like some board members sitting here and those who are now gone have done? You first said in a public meeting that our commitment to transparency is real. Then in the very next meeting, you stepped that back and talked about your responsibilities. You are responsible for the welfare of the students, past and present, who make up this institution, not just the name of an institution. What will your legacy be? Now for Dennis Denno, I know he's not there, but still. Dennis Denno, this is a broken system that needs someone with integrity to lead. You campaigned on being fully transparent, and yet here we are with a behind-closed-door decision not to take a public vote and not to release the documents. The board is not being transparent if this type of thing can still happen. We need board members who are open, frank, and honest. We need you to roll up their sleeves and make things right at this university for the 1 out of 4 women sexually assaulted after they enroll here, and for the 546 of us and our families who are affected by one single employee. I beg you to make a motion before this meeting is adjourned to have a public vote today on whether to allow an investigation by giving the Attorney General the documents she needs to finish it. Azam Elder, our attorney, has a copy of the lawsuit, and I hereby serve you with notice of our grievances against you and Michigan State University. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Attorney Quinn will accept service on behalf of the named trustees. That may follow later. Our next speaker is Jennifer Hayes, followed by Kristen Nagley. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. I am Jennifer Hayes and an MSU alumni. As an undergraduate, I was the MSU synchronized skating head coach and director of the MSU Figure Skating Club. In addition, I briefly rode varsity crew. I bled green and white for 4 decades. But I am also a survivor. Mr. Kelly, I came here today to talk to you. I can't believe that I feel I must do this again after speaking in court in 2018 and in 2022. Why? Why are we still here talking? The lack of accountability from this university to myself and my fellow survivors is outrageous. You might have sent out checks, but that truly isn't justice. Justice means that you take responsibility for what you have done. You apologize, and you change so that you don't do it again. It simply means being honest. MSU still isn't being honest. You can't be honest when you hide more than 6,000 documents and then make a secret decision that you won't publicly take a vote on whether to release them. 5 years after all the scare and bullying tactics you used against us survivors, this university hasn't changed a bit. Mr. Kelly, you've served 8 years on this board, and you presumably want to run next year to serve another 8. We've seen you just recently step up to act and release 2 reports that fell under attorney-client privilege, reports known by the law firms that wrote them, Quinn Emanuel and the Honigman reports. But we need you to step up publicly for the sister survivors. We need you right now to make a motion before this meeting is adjourned to vote on releasing the 6,000 secret documents to complete the Attorney General's investigation. Please. We need to know that justice was done and that everyone who needs to has been held accountable before the statute of limitations runs out. Do the right thing. And please don't make us drag this through court. We didn't come for money. We came for the truth. I now serve this lawsuit filed by a group of sister survivors and the parent group posse on Dan Kelly and the rest of the board. Only truth heals. Thank you.
Service on behalf of the board and the named trustee. Our next speaker is Kristen Nagley, followed by Alexis Hazen. Kristen, are you?
Hello, good morning, Board of Trustees, and thank you for having us today to speak to you. My name is Kristen Nagel. I am a survivor of MSU evil satanic pedophile Larry Nassar. Kelly T. Bay and the board, I'm here to talk to you. When you first ran for the board in 2018, when you first ran, you told the Sister Survivors you understood us because you were a victim too. 6 years later, we can say that you are nothing at all like us. For 6 years, you have anxiously sat behind the board table, wringing your hands and telling us that you can't do anything because the board members would not go along with you. We helped elect you. We have called on you to represent us, and all we have seen is you crying, lying, cruel crocodile tears. Very insincere sorrow. Very pretended sorrow. We should be and are examples to you of what truth, courage, and leadership looks like. We are examples to every one of you, showing what it actually takes to get this job done. We are not just crying, but we're taking real action toward real truth and justice. You have said that you are on our side, that you're fighting for transparency and for us to the public eye. I'm not sure what you really have done for survivors, Ms. T-Bay and the board, but what I am sure of is we do not feel it or we do not see it, and we are working through and struggling with our traumas, our true traumas that you have promised to help us heal from, and you have not helped our mission to find completion and rest with this problem. Nice words are not good enough. You can't hide behind the lack of support anymore because enough of your fellow board members have publicly pledged transparency to be able to release these documents to the authorities. Unless you are each lying in said promises to make to us survivors So what I'm wondering is, when are you going to get some gumption and gusto and take major action? I'm now on you right now to call on you to make a motion before this meeting is adjourned and to have the public vote here on releasing the 6,000 secret documents to the authorities, investigators, and, like, true changers of this world that want to make the world a better place. So what are you waiting on? Don't wait another 2 years before you're elected, please. And we just don't want any more unkept promises. We would love to see any positive change forward. Thank you. And I do now serve this lawsuit filed by one group of Sister Survivors and the Parents Group Posse on you, Ms. T-Bay, and only truth heals us. Thank you, board members,
you
board of trustees.
Attorney Quinn will approach the next
service
on behalf of the named trustee and board. Our next speaker is Alexis Hazen, followed by Azam Elder. Alexis, good morning.
Hi. My name is Alexis Alvarado, and I'm a Sister Survivor. It is painful for me to be here speaking publicly, but I feel it is what I have to do because of all of us Sister Survivors are still waiting for MSU to do the right thing. And the right thing is allowing an investigation into our case so that this won't happen to someone else's child. You've said over and over again that you read the records the Attorney General asked for, and that it's fine that MSU refuses to release them because everything is fine. With all due respect, what reason would we have to believe you? Also, as the Attorney General asked, how would you know, since you don't have the majority of the facts in the case because you're not investigating it? We are so tired of weak assurances. All you've given us is words when we need action. You claim that you want to release the records, and you've been making clear statements since you ran for office. You said, I believe it is very important when something horrific like this occurs not to cover it up, but instead to bring what happened to light and to learn from it. The only way we can avoid trauma from repeating itself is to, if we study the history carefully and we remember the lessons from past mistakes, harms, and errors. So don't cover it up. Do something to take some ownership after sitting on this board for years. Or are your words just another public relations stunt because you think the other board members won't allow for a public vote to happen? What are you actually going to do to keep trauma from continuing? What are you going to do so you, Renee Kanacki Jefferson, don't keep harming us by making us keep coming and asking for a public investigation into who knew what about Nassar and when? This isn't some moral exercise in a textbook. We are real people who are trying to live our lives and waiting for you, everyone on the board, to do the right thing. I call on you to make a motion before this meeting is adjourned to have a public vote on releasing the records to the Attorney General. And I hereby serve this lawsuit, filed by a group of sister survivors and the parent group posse, on you, Renee Konecki Jefferson. Only truth will heal.
Thank you, Alexis. Attorney Quinn will approach and accept service on behalf of the named trustee and the board.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Azam Elder, followed by Ryan Gazal. Attorney Elder, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Azam Elder. I represent the survivors and their families and their supporters. They asked me to be here today and to speak, to kind of like just let you know why they filed a lawsuit. I think they've done a better job than I'm going to do right now. But when I look at the board, you know, you can kind of see everybody has their own history, where you come from, what you did. And you all hear the saying, speak truth to power. And then one day you're blessed and you are in the seat of power. And then one day that chapter will close. And you look back and you say, what did I do with that power? This year, so many of them had so much hope and promise because they thought this board was going to be different and transparent. And they really believed it because I've spoken to all of them. Regrettably, this year, I was asked to file a lawsuit because under our law, we're allowed to keep politicians. Excuse me for saying that, but you are politicians. To make sure that you're truthful. They brought forth evidence that shows that you guys did make a decision behind closed doors. We know it. We know it. You broke the promise. So we have to file the lawsuit. And we're here today, and you can see the difference. It's so obvious. When you work for the university and you're speaking, you're reading off the report, and then you hear somebody who's speaking from the heart, you see the difference. You guys have one big decision to make. One big decision. And you know what the right thing is to do is. Just release the documents. You don't even have to waive the privilege. Just release the documents. That's all they're asking for. The same way they were released under prior situations. The court system is designed to make sure that those who are in power are transparent. That's why they asked for this lawsuit to be filed. They shouldn't have to go through that. Just have the guts. Vote. If you want to vote to keep the document secret, vote. But they have a right to know where you stand. They have a right to know. The most important thing is that this board said that they've changed. When I sent the FOIA asking for information on whether or not you voted, if you changed, why would your staff send us back hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents and give me or send me the election results of the last presidential race, Biden versus Trump? That's not change. Thank you.
Thank you, Azam. Our next speaker is Ryan Gazal, followed by Brian Van Elslander. Ryan? Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to read you a few words from an MSU supply chain professor regarding MSU and Dow's Axia Research Institute. I'm aware MSU supply chain chair Vedat Verder and Broad Dean Sanjay Gupta investigated executive director Catherine Franz and the performance of Axia subsequent to Ryan Gazal contacting members of its executive advisory board regarding the same. Verder and Gupta met with members of the Dow community to fire Franz as a result of their investigation. However, the Dow community prevented Verder and Gupta from firing Franz. Axia was then removed from Broad and absorbed by the Office of Research and Innovation, ORI, where Franz began reporting to Interim Vice President Doug Gage. I met with Doug Gage and Provost Teresa Sullivan to discuss the performance of Franz in Axia. During my meeting, the following conversation took place. Observations of employee mistreatment and abuse. Concerns over Franz disseminating an email to a vast list of internal and external associates in which slanderous language was used to describe Gazelle and an untruthful lineage of events. Franz's unprofessional conduct and unethical treatment of people, potential misuse and misreporting of Axia finances and funds, and that paying partners held Franz to be unprofessional and unsuitable. ORI conducted an investigation into the performance of Franz and Axia, and Franz was forced to resign as a result. If not for Ryan Gazelle, I do not believe Axia or Franz would have been investigated by Broad or ORI. I am Ryan Gazelle. And the affidavit, one of seven before you, goes on to detail how Franz placed a gag order on all staff, preventing them from talking to me, any members of the MSU community, including Dean Gupta and Dow. I managed the professor who wrote this, and to add, she concealed her own pregnancy from this woman to avoid being fired for perceived weakness. In exchange for reporting these extreme abuses, I was made a slave and raped of my intellectual property by the university. I was never compensated for my work, which is still used to advertise Axia and mislead its potential partners. Worse, the investigation uncovered a professor I was forced to work with alongside at Axia was suspended by the university without pay for, and I quote, two sustained complaints of forcible sexual contact. This was his third offense, and during that suspension is when he was employed by Axia and paid with university and donor funds. Actions I took prevented further abuse and protected students, staff, faculty, researchers, and partners of this university, and in exchange, I have honor. And I was branded by a few colleagues of mine as the real Spartan. So, Dr. Woodruff and the board, as you are currently sitting in your roles, I ask that you take action to prevent bad actors like this from ruining another Spartan's life like my own. And remember, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, especially if thy neighbor is a real Spartan like those who just spoke before me. You can read this document and hundreds more scheduled to be released daily at therealspartan.com. Appreciate your time, and I look forward to the next meeting.
Thank you, Ryan. Our next speaker is Brian Van Elslander via Zoom, and then Ty Rihanna Leslie. Brian, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. My name is Brian Van Elslander, and I've enjoyed a deep 40-year relationship with the university, first as a 1987 graduate of Broad College, a significant donor, and an active board member of several Broad initiatives, including the Dean's Advisory Board, where I served as president and president emeritus for 2019 to 2021. Like so many others, I have enthusiastically dedicated my time, treasure, and talent to Michigan State. But I am but one of countless Broad alumni who stand dumbfounded by the wrongful dismissal of Dean Sanjay Gupta, and now by the inaction of the administration and trustees to reverse this decision. I have been fortunate to work closely with Dean Gupta for over a decade and have shared with many of you my deep respect and admiration for his leadership at Broad. In my opinion, no member of Broad has done more to enhance Broad's national and global standing than Dean Gupta. The accomplishments of the Dean are by now surely known to you, and span from academic excellence to substantial alumni engagement. Importantly, Dean Gupta created a platform for meaningful financial stewardship that would support initiatives for generations to come. These actions by the administration and the inaction by the board have destroyed much of that progress, but there is still an opportunity to reclaim that progress. It has been over 1 year since Dean Gupta was wrongfully dismissed from his role as dean. It's been over 5 months since we received the conclusions of the independent investigation from Quinn Emanuel, the law firm that this board appointed to review the administration's decision in this matter. In their report, it was determined, and I quote, the personnel actions taken against Gupta appeared disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation, and based on a factual record that included errors and omissions of relevant information and context. Errors and omissions. To what standards do we hold ourselves at Michigan State University? You can no longer ignore these revelations. It is so difficult to admit fault or error, but it is a cornerstone of leadership that we do. Dean Sanjay Gupta is a man of honor and integrity and he is an extraordinary leader. Great organizations celebrate their leaders, and you are casting one out. I'd like to share the first pledge of the Board of Trustees Code of Ethics found on your website. And this is your pledge. I quote, "We will perform our responsibilities ethically, honestly, with integrity. I plead with you to fulfill your fiduciary duty and reinstate Dean Sanjay Gupta. And let's move forward finally as one. Spartans will."
Thank you, Brian. Our next speaker is Tyriana Leslie, followed by Nancy DiBiagio. Tyriana? Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, everyone. My name is Tyriana Leslie, and I'm the president of the Black Students Alliance. I am speaking in regards to the Black community and some of our major concerns when it comes to attending this university. Our first major concern is safety. Over the summer, I spoke with several VPs, including VP Lynch. I was glad to hear that camera installation has started and there will be thousands of cameras installed across campus in the span of over 3 years. But a major concern that was brought to my attention is the lack of light coverage across campus. Although cameras can cover an area, without light coverage, the perpetrator cannot be identified, which brings me to my next point of accountability. An incident occurred over the summer where the N-word was written in marker across the pavement. Although I spoke with several VPs of the school, there was no sign of accountability and how it can be held, which is very disheartening. I had the pleasure to speak with a few Board of Trustees, and they came up with several forms of accountability and solutions, especially Chair Rima Vassar, who was one of the first to let us know that the answers we heard from these individuals were unacceptable and something actually can't be done. But when we asked how these could be implemented, there was actually no sign of accountability. These incidents will continue to happen over and over again, unfortunately, if accountability is not being held. Over the summer, we addressed our concerns to the public and to the officials of the school, but still no statement was released, which led to many people not even knowing about the incident. What can we do about this? Black students want to feel safe on campus, but how can we do this if we are not even protected by the university? Which is probably why the enrollment rate of Black students have dropped this past school year. Which leads me to my next point in the MCC building. The Black community has been advocating for this freestanding multicultural center for decades. Darius Payne spoke to us about the sit-in that occurred in 1989 in which he led regarding the multicultural center. Now his fight is finally coming to fruition. Or is it? For decades, we have been advocating for more space. One of the original multicultural centers in the basement of the Union included a meeting space, resource room, student gathering space, and director's office. But students continue to advocate for more space, and which we will continue to do. We even conducted a study on what students want from the MCC building. Majority of students wanted to be a comfortable space for Black students where we can have our own actual space. One of the answers from the survey said that the MCC should be a safe space and a home for all minority students, as well as we don't have anything where we feel truly at home, and this should be it. Majority of the answers from the survey also said that this should be a place where OCAT and AAAS studies are actually located. One of the worst possible outcomes is that the building is not being utilized for the students that it is being built for. 81.6% of students said that they have not actually been asked their opinions regarding the MCC building, which is why it is imperative that you all listen to our actual needs for this building. Our elders literally fought for this, and we will continue to fight for this as well. I look forward to the upcoming meetings and our voices actually being heard. I hope in the future everyone will consider each and every Black student on this campus. Thank you all.
Thank you. Our panel speaker is Nancy DiBiagio.
Hi. It's nice to see the board again. And interim president Teresa Woodruff, and many of you know. And for those of you that don't know me, I am an alum of Michigan State University and the widow of John DiBiagio. So I have a great passion for this place. And I am delighted to see this lovely presentation here of these paintings. I'm a painter, too, so I have a great appreciation. And we do know that we were losing space for the 20-some-on portraits that were in this room. And probably they're going to be growing. And so where do we find a place in this university that is more than eight places? And if any of you stepped over into the auditorium, I did and have, and there's eight of them there. And, guys, it's kind of dingy. It's kind of dark. It's old. And I think we can put our heads together and, you know, bring consensus, bring the community together, and find a really appropriate place for the leadership of our university, whether you believe with them or not. But, you know, we had John Hanna. He made this place a major place. I mean, he squared it off, as John said. He'd square off and, you know, gather more acreage. So my idea is if we could just take a pause, get together, create a, you know, a committee, and maybe we can bring this all in consensus so we can work together, find a great place for these historical, you know, portraits to be. We just can't sort of throw them out, but I think all of you would agree that maybe sort of that's kind of temporary over there and we can find a better place. And then also give their history next to them, whether it's a QR code, whether it's like you see in a museum, and maybe there's a map to see that on campus for those that come around to see this campus and want to know about us. So I think we could do that. And that's all I have to say, and it's great to see everybody again.
Thank you very much. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes this morning's public participation of comments non-germane to the agenda.
Thank you. I turn to Trustee Rima Vassar for the liaison report, chairperson report, and trustee comments.
We will now hear the student liaison report.
All right. Hi, everyone. For those of you who I have not had the privilege of meeting yet, my name is Emily Hoyempa, and I'm the Associate Student of Michigan State University and the Michigan State University Undergraduate Student Body President. I'm here representing our 40,000 undergraduate Spartans, which is the largest on record, as I found out from Provost Yitzko today, and I'm honored to be in the role at this time. Back-to-school season has been hectic in the best way possible, and I'm excited to continue getting involved and getting to better understand the Spartan community throughout my term. Along with that, I hope everyone is feeling this Lions victory Friday with the Thursday night football against the Chiefs late last night. As we start off the 2023-2024 academic year, ASMSU is hoping it works alongside respective Michigan State University parties to accomplish many initiatives, from improvements in campus safety and justice and healing for Ariel, Alex, and Brian, to improvements in mental health and access to those resources for all Spartans alike, and positive change with RVSM and Title IX, students have the drive to do this work. Yet, we cannot do this work without the support of our stakeholders, such as the Michigan State University Board of Trustees and Michigan State University Administration. With that being said, we hope to embark on this adventure together and establish an open and transparent relationship for the betterment of all Spartans. Along with talking about what we are hoping to work on and accomplish this year, we are excited to see that the board is taking the initiative to revise its policies and bylaws. Organizations cannot remain stagnant, and I hope these changes are simply not a one and done, especially because there's so much work that we all need to do. On that same note, however, it is rather disheartening to see that among these policies today, there is still incredibly outdated language from the 80s with the student liaison, but also no cores and copsy to the board, even though that resolution has been written and presented. For a group that says they want to hear from students and better understand their perspectives, adding a seat for the students that are a minority on this campus at a predominantly white institution is a great place to start. Even more so, if student perspectives are truly valued by this board, take the initiative to hear from students in committees rather than having students beg and plead through public comment to have a voice. With that, last night, the first ASMSU General Assembly meeting, we passed Bill 6007, which is calling for ASMSU to stand with survivors and call upon the Board of Trustees to release the record of the 6,000 documents from the Larry Nassar case to the Michigan Attorney General. As I stated in the June board meeting, withholding these documents shows a lack of genuine care for survivors, opposing the principles MSU supposedly stands for. The fact that survivors have been calling for the release of these documents and have been greeted by silence from Michigan State University and the board is simply proving the narrative that this board and the university do not listen to survivors unless it benefits them. If Michigan State University and this board claim that they're going to learn and do better, I implore you to please take action now. Release the documents and give the survivors on this campus a tool to help with their healing journey. In other news, yesterday, even in the rain, I had the pleasure of speaking in the new rec center groundbreaking. With this endeavor, Michigan State University is putting in the work of putting students' health and well-being first and cultivating that culture of health and wellness, which I think we are all happy to see. However, with this new rec center officially being built with a 50-meter pool, I think it's time that Michigan State University swim and dive is reinstated, don't you? If this rec center is meant to support all students and Spartans on their wellness journeys, I hope this board takes the initiative to reinstate swim and dive as soon as possible. As Interim President Woodruff quoted me, which I did not know she was doing, by the way, East Lansing isn't just home because of the place, but it is home because of the people. To the Board of Trustees, if this place is really home, if you truly care about the Spartans, and if you truly care about transparency and accountability, please listen to those who publicly commented today, and don't just talk the talk, but walk the walk. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm a little tall. I gotta move this up. Hi, everyone. My name is Taylor Sutton. I'm the president of the Residence Halls Association, also known as RHA. For those of you who don't know what RHA is, we are the on-campus student government representing over 15,000 students in our 26 residence halls across campus, as well as our neighborhoods each have their own Black and Queer caucus and an identity caucus known as Transcend. I'm happy to report that we are off to a great start this semester. We completed our fall training while move-in was happening concurrently, and this past Wednesday we had our first General Assembly meeting. While, as our constituents continue to get involved, having their elections and the like, I wanted to highlight some priorities that we've already established and want to work on this year. For one, campus safety is our number one agenda item at this time. Many students living in our residence halls bore the brunt of the lasting effects of the tragic events that happened on February 13th. Places that were their home had suddenly become a place of chaos and fear. Students were barricading themselves in their room, listening to the chaos happening on police scanners and social media, trying to cling to any knowledge they could find to make them feel safe. With this, this is a chance for us to work with our partners, the board, and our administration to help make students feel safe living here at Michigan State. Remind them that this is their home and this is somewhere that they can feel safe. And we have a lot of work to do to accomplish that, but we want to make that happen this year. In terms of accomplishing this, this rolls into another priority of ours about elevating student voices. We've already utilized a fairly successful campaign of using digital resources such as QR codes to help drive up student involvement. And we plan to continue doing this throughout the semester in order to collect information and student opinions. That way we're able to take the voices not only of us as student liaisons, but the voices of the constituents and the students we represent directly to higher levels such as this. We'll go through this on a variety of issues, including campus safety, two-year live-on requirement, as well as even basic information like searching for input on events and programming and ways that we can better support our students. In terms of programming, this fall is looking like it's going to be very fun. We have some engaging events, such as a tie-dye event, outdoor movie nights, and all sorts of other programming. And in addition, we're excited to continue with collaborative partnerships, such as It's On Us Week of Action, as well as many other events that we are currently in the works with ASMSU and many of our other campus partners. These are just a small slice of the pie that I mentioned today, and many more are coming. Overall, this is likely going to be a shorter report for me than we were going to see throughout the year, but with many of our hall governments and caucuses still having their elections, I know that our agenda and the things we're working on is only going to continue to grow and develop as the year continues. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. So thank you very much for having me here today. I'm Hannah Jeffrey, and I use she, her pronouns. And I would just like to say that things are getting confusing here because there's a lot of issues. And I think that a lot of people have lost a lot of trust. And I personally still hold some trust close to my heart because I do believe, after having spoken to each and every one of you, that there is a person in these seats, that there are people in these seats, each with different perspectives, each with things that they long to tell other people but cannot necessarily communicate. However, I do also believe that I have been a weak leader myself at times. In fact,
One of the problems that has recently arisen with the Recreation and Wellness Center has been a major concern among my fellow graduate and professional students. We have personally been charged roughly $240 per year, and this amount will increase to $340 per year in order to finance the Recreation and Wellness Center facility. All undergraduate students are also subjected to the same fee. This fee is not negotiable. We cannot vote, we cannot ask for this fee to be waived in any way, shape, or form. Because it is not part of our tuition, it does not get paid as part of our stipend. So we have another fee to pay, a fee that could potentially pay for a cavity to be filled, for a broken phone screen that cuts your fingers to be fixed, something for an emergency medical procedure for your cat or for your dog. There is simply no way to describe just how much impact comfort has on our lives. It makes us feel like we are more than just workers, like we are Spartans, like we are valued. And I do hope at the bottom of my heart that we can work out, if at all possible, a negotiation to create a relief fund at the very least for the students that legitimately cannot afford to pay this fee. However, there are students that would say that doesn't go far enough. They would ask that the fee be waived for all graduate and professional students, or at least included in their tuition package so that they can be reimbursed, as they would be for any other fee assessed by the campus. These are the words of my people. I would also like to say that I do believe survivors, and I believe them when they collectively tell me that they are hurting from the experience of not releasing these documents. The documents may not seem so important, as they have been vetted by a judge, as they have been talked about endlessly, as we have determined that they fall under attorney-client privilege. However, they are telling me they are hurting, and I cannot ignore their voices. So please, hold an open vote and release them, because it's the only thing that really, really, I think, will heal their hearts. Thank you.
Hannah, thank you for your remarks, and welcome, Emily. We appreciate you being here. And Taylor, thank you for joining us this year. Thank you for your remarks. Now we will have the faculty liaison report.
Good morning, everyone. It's still morning, right? Yeah, it is. Hi, my name is Jack Lipton. I'm the chair of the Faculty Senate. I'd like to thank my predecessor, Dr. Karen Kelly Blake, for her service and her counsel as I step into this new role. I'd also like to thank the board and our new faculty liaison, Trustee Dan Kelly, for an open and honest discussion with the faculty delegation yesterday. We discussed proposed changes to board bylaws and policies relating to board organization, transparency, ethics, and conflicts of interest. I was absolutely shocked by the response of the board. By shocked, I mean that the board was thoughtful, supportive, and amenable to several of our suggestions, and today's amendments to the board's bylaws are a good start. Not a great start, but a good start. And I see further revisions to the board's policies as an opportunity. I'm hopeful that if we work together and respect each other's roles and expertise, we can make Michigan State University a better place to work, learn, and succeed. We have not forgotten your promise to seek meaningful training to help you appropriately fulfill your oversight roles at the university and work together productively with each other, the administration, and the entire university community. We look forward to helping facilitate such training in any way possible. We also thank the board for the instituted 4% merit raise throughout the university. However, might I also note that merit increases since the pandemic have not kept up pace with inflation. We appreciate that the board has the responsibility to be good financial stewards, but is it good financial stewardship to effectively reduce the buying power of faculty and staff in the face of record enrollment with sub-inflation raises? We understand that tuition and appropriations increases have not kept up with inflation, but that is something that the board can address. If you don't, then we will likely lose more of our internationally prominent faculty to other universities or sectors and spend even more to replace them. No one said that the financial decisions borne by trustees are easy to make, but decisive and wise decisions are required. Keep this university moving ever upward by at least helping faculty and staff have the same buying power they had pre-pandemic. Finally, we discussed the current presidential search. MSU is a destination for student athletes around the world because they aspire to be a part of the storied reputation of this great university. Their hard work is broadcast to Spartans everywhere, inspiring the public to invest in their achievements and attracting donors who collectively support the world-class facilities like the Breslin Center and the salaries of top coaches like Tom Izzo and Mel Tucker. The greatness of the athletes feeds the reputation, which enables us to compete for the very best human assets to further that reputation. Our academic reputation works the same way. Faculty come to MSU to compete and succeed on a global scale. Their reputation and quality drives discovery, excellence in teaching, the caliber of the students, and philanthropic gifts, which then drive greater excellence in recruitment, achievement, and reputation. The clearest way that we can demonstrate our values and attract the faculty equivalents of Tom Izzo or Mel Tucker is by finding a top-tier president. The next president of MSU must be worthy of the office, someone with an international reputation in academia, someone who has indisputably succeeded at the very highest levels of scholarship and leadership, someone who places the university's success above their own self-interests, someone who inspires faculty, staff, students, alumni, donors, and the trustees to be their best selves, a president who will help bring this university to the very heights of its potential. As far as I'm concerned, the sky's the limit when it comes to the Spartans. But that means not rushing the search to meet an arbitrary Thanksgiving deadline. It means doing our due diligence for the institution and valuing quality above all else. If we only seek to find an adequate or convenient candidate as our next president, we have already failed. This board will choose the next president of MSU. If we settle for someone who is just good enough, we all lose. Thank you for your frank and honest discussion and for your willingness to hear the voices of the faculty. Go Green.
Pleasure to have you as our faculty liaison, and surprisingly, I do agree with most of what you said.
there's always one day with me.
It's going to be a great year. It's going to be a great year. I have remarks here that I need to get to, but I just wanted to say one thing first. I'm going to read Audre Lorde. She had a short poem, and I do want to make sure that I honor my father today. His birthday is Monday. He's born on 9/11. He says he's an emergency. he has passed. He was a veteran. He passed 2 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago. You know, COVID years go, they get a little bit wonky. But he was a poet as well. And Audre Lorde says, and when we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it is better to speak, remembering that we were never meant to survive. I love that. And I generally start most of my presentations with that quote, because sometimes what we have to say isn't always popular. Sometimes it's not going to be welcomed. And each of the speakers today said something that may not be welcomed by everyone in the room, but that you came, and you came with trembling voices, sometimes knocking knees, sometimes sweat. Right? You came with a trembling voice to let us know what we needed to know from you. Mm-hmm. I want to commend you on your bravery. Mm-hmm. Please know that it's very difficult for me. One, to hear I'm a politician. I'm not sure which one said that. There was a guy who said that. It's very difficult to hear that, because in my heart, I'm an educator. I'm a daughter. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. Thank you, Lucius, for coming today. I'm a friend. I'm an advocate. I'm a change agent. Politician is so far down on my list. And I'm human. I think that's what Hannah was trying to say earlier, that I'm not just a person in a suit, a body in a suit, or an automaton, or a zombie. I'm actually human. And so to hear all your stories and to hear all your concerns over and over and over again is heartbreaking for me. I'm doing my best. I hear you. And I'm doing my best. The first order of business is the president's evaluation. Dr. Lipton, I did want to tell you that we are continuing our board governance training. We had another session on Friday. I think that a lot of the concerns that people have voiced over the years as this board this year has been constituted, we're working on them. And so we have ongoing sessions with a consultant that we all seem to like, although it's very spirited at times. And he might not like us all the time, but we certainly do. And we appreciate your suggestion. And we actually are learning a lot about one another and moving forward. So I just wanted to make sure I said that as well. The president's report, the evaluation. The Board of Trustees is charged with conducting an annual performance evaluation of the Michigan State University president, led by the Committee on Budget and Finance, which I am the chair of. An evaluation of interim President Woodruff was conducted this summer. In general, the intent of the presidential evaluation is to assess the president's performance in leading the institution, increase the president's and institution's effectiveness, encourage communication between the board and president regarding expectations, goals, and accomplishments, and fulfill the board's governance responsibilities. Interim President Woodruff's appointment was effective November 4th, 2022. Given the length of the time in the role, a focused assessment was conducted, asking the interim president to reflect on engagement and leadership across three areas. And I want to commend Soroy Brogdon for your work on helping to have a focused assessment this year. I appreciate your input, and Dr. Fletcher as well. Presidential transition and leadership engagement, February 13th, and the response efforts after that, relationship violence and sexual misconduct were the three areas of focus this year. The evaluation process consisted of a self-assessment and input from board members on the interim president's performance. The process also included the opportunity for board members to provide feedback and recommendations. The board and the interim president engaged in a wide-ranging discussion across these three areas, centering on various aspects of the core role of the president: relationship building, crisis management, outreach and engagement, communications, and building and maintaining a leadership team that can effectively serve the university and its stakeholders. In sum, the board finds that Dr. Woodruff has met and exceeded expectations in her capacity as the interim president since assuming the role in November 2022. The board wishes to particularly commend Dr. Woodruff for her leadership during the tragic events of February 13, 2023. The board and the interim president agreed on three priority areas for the future: enhancing and formalizing the university's effort to safeguard against pass-the-harasser situations in our hiring processes, finalizing programmatic planning and developing a comprehensive funding strategy for the Engineering and Digital Innovation Center, and playing a lead role in advancing the university's relationships with alumni, donor, and friends in support of preparing for the university's next capital campaign. The board looks forward to a continued engagement with the interim president in the coming months to advance the university's priorities and objectives as framed by MSU's strategic plan. In light of interim president's exemplary performance since November 4, 2022, the Committee on Budget and Finance recommends, and I move the following, that interim president Teresa K. Woodruff's total salary be increased by 5% effective on October 1, 2023. Get a raise. That the chair of the Board of Trustees is hereby authorized to execute any documents and agreements as may be necessary or appropriate in connection with the implementation of this action.
I'll support.
Any objections? Discussion? Hearing none? I don't think we need a roll call. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Dr. Woodruff and I had an opportunity to, and I spoke about this in Grand Rapids last academic year. And we spoke at CAS Tech. I think you were the first MSU president to ever speak at a commencement ceremony in Detroit, so I appreciate you making the trip to CAS Tech, which is one of the most illustrious schools in the state, actually. So I appreciate that. During that, I was able to introduce President Woodruff. And when I sat down, because they introduced the introducer, you know how that goes, right? So they introduced me. And so I sat down, and I sat next to an alum on the dais, and she said, "Oh, good job. You're the first Black woman chair." She said, "I'm gonna pray for you." And I said, "I need your prayers." And I do. I appreciate prayer. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this woman. She said, "I'm gonna pray for you." She said, "I know that must be really difficult." I said, "There's a lot of challenges. You know, we had a murder on our campus, several murders, shootings. We've gone through a lot this year." And she said, "That and you being who you are is going to be a challenge." I said, "You're right." And she said, "They're probably already trying to change the rules, aren't they?" And I said, "How did you know?" And she said, "I've been Black all my life." With that, I would say that the diversity of this board is actually aligned with the land grant mission of this university. The diversity of thought, expertise, talent, and diversity in experience has the strength to change the trajectory of this board and the institution as we look forward to our next president. I want to commend Governor Whitmer for her wisdom in appointing Trustee Sandy Pierce. I was going to just say Sandy, but Sandy Pierce. Because she actually has changed the board dynamics with her experience. And so I'm grateful that she's here. The land grant mission of this university offers the promise of equity, justice, and the freedom for all those who aspire to serve to do so with grace and dignity and the support of their fellow Spartans. I'm grateful to this board. I commend your actions this morning. I'm a little grieved that Trustee Deno, who is an active trustee, as most of you know, was not able to participate in a vote that would allow him to discuss bylaws that we agree to. I really would prefer that he had been here, but he's not. He's ill. But I appreciate your swift action. There have been a couple of times this year that we've been able to swiftly turn around, which is not usually the way of the board, but Ed's reference, Honeyman and Quinn Emanuel, and now these bylaws. It was pretty quick, and so I just appreciate your efforts to move the university forward swiftly. Dr. Gage, thank you for this presentation. As usual, you always bring an eclectic perspective, and I appreciate today's presentation and the installation of the arts. Please do know, Ms. DiBaggio, that we do have a plan for those portraits. And I feel like you read my mind because they will be placed in places across the campus that are germane and meaningful to those presidents, along with some history, so that it's a more meaningful way to talk about our presidents in the past and in the future. Thank you, Provost Yitzko, for your presentation on our enrollment. I want to officially welcome 11,000 new Spartans, plus all the returning students, and I extend my warmest wishes for a successful journey this year. This is my third academic year on this board, and they always say three is a charm. I'm looking to be charmed. Okay. I'm looking to be charmed and to be charming sometimes. I've had many wonderful opportunities to meet and greet our students in, all over the campus this summer. The Business Success Institute, I was able to speak to those students who were during their summer bridge. They just excite me. The young folks really are a different type of thinker than we have ever seen before, and I just appreciate being in their presence. I get inspired. I get motivated. Their empathy and their self-care is exemplary. It's an example of what we should aspire to, the older folks, as we are living our lives. So I appreciate that. And your technology. I wanted to also say, Taylor, I did have my technology up there yesterday. I noticed.
The tablet.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, it's a tablet because my eyes are bad. But I still did. I didn't have the binder. Okay. I just wanted you to give it up to me. I try to be tech savvy sometimes. So I'm excited about these leaders, the future leaders of our illustrious campus, but the future leaders of our world. I see potential in all students, and those Broad College students were just awesome. They were truly inspiring. Also, Interim President Woodruff and I were at the mental health breakfast, and it was really, really nice. We were able to thank the folks who have responded in mass and powerfully to the emotional, mental, and well-being needs of our community after those events on February 13th. And it was a warm setting. If you're ever in a room full of counselors, you just feel rejuvenated. And that was the theme, respond, reconnect, and rejuvenate. And I would just add in there to rest. Some of you are not resting, and it's showing up. I know I'm not. I've had these nightmares of one side of my face becoming a big wrinkle, and that's a problem. I'm not sleeping very well, and so I'm committing to myself. As I talk to you, I'm talking to myself to rest and respond and reconnect and rejuvenate. But that beautifully captured how the strength of the Spartan community lies in our ability to support one another and to respond with love and kindness and unity and determination. And the board is grateful for the network of dedicated providers who have tirelessly supported our fellow Spartans, particularly in this moment. I also could go on and on about the wonderful activities and opportunities I had to connect with Spartans, including tours of the veterinary medical center, and just last week visiting the College of Ag. I want to thank Interim Dean Douglas Freeman and Director Kelly Myers for the Vet Med Center guided tour. They not only showered me with all kinds of good food and great information and great conversation, but my son was with us. He's what's the word I want to say to describe him? Spirited. That's a good word. He's a spirited fellow who was like, yeah, so can we get to the animals, right? I'm tired of hearing about the research here. Let's get to the animals. And we were able to see a horse put into the ultrasound. He was lying in the ultrasound machine. It's a big deal. So we talked to chickens, and we also we're able to pet lambs, and so it was. I appreciate them and how loving and kind they were to my son, who is spirited, I would say, is the best word to describe him. So thank you for that, thank you for the fellowship and the conversation. I learned a lot about the STEM portion of the Vet Med Center. Also, I'd like to thank CANR Dean Kelly Millenbaugh. I've seen her career grow, and she is a star. Director of MSU Ag Bioresearch, Dr. George Smith, the director of MSU Extension, Dr. Quentin Tyler, who went to Morocco and didn't invite me, by the way, for the tour of the College of Ag. It was a great pleasure to meet all of you and to hear about MSU's excellent resources, learning opportunities, and innovative research. This is a premier institution, and as I've been told over and over and over again, we are doing so many great things that I'm excited about the future and excited about the leadership who will continue to this legacy of greatness in our research, but then also push us forward. Interactions like these, where I see MSU's mission in action, are one of the great joys of being a trustee. Later this afternoon, I look forward to speaking at the Achieving Black Equity by 2030 Summit, which is a group of folks, MSUBA largely, who are thinking about our strategic plan and how we help minoritized students. I want to acknowledge the BSA for their presence today, and thank you for engaging. I do recognize that student leaders they have a lot to do, right? Classes, social activities, trouble, good trouble, right? This is good trouble, but it's hard. Advocacy is hard. And so getting up in the morning on a Friday with a written speech within 3 minutes, all the students who continue to come here, I commend you and I thank you. If we don't hear from you, then we don't necessarily know how to move the university forward with your priorities. And so I want to commend you. And I apologize publicly for the racial violence that you experienced. I know that you did not hear anything from leadership around the graffiti and the racial violence you experienced last academic year, and I want to personally apologize to you for that. And we'll work on making sure that you feel safe and that you feel like you have belongingness here as well. Finally, to conclude my comments, I'd like to thank Interim President Woodruff for stepping into the role of Interim President and providing resolute leadership these past 10 months. You have had a tough job, and I've been praying the whole time for you, for us, this institution. And I appreciate how you've stepped up in so many different ways, but with grace and dignity for all of us to see. Those two attributes, I'm taking from you and taking with you as you go forward in our university. Thank you so much. We appreciate her hard work on behalf of the university, students, and staff, and our alumni and the greater Spartan community. We particularly recognize her steadfast leadership during the violence that our campus experienced in February and her commitment to improved safety since then. We look forward to her support through an upcoming presidential transition period. And one thing I want to leave you with is thinking about, again, Audre Lorde. We weren't meant to survive, right? But yet we thrive. And as Maya Angelou said, not only do we survive and thrive, yet we rise. We rise together as Spartans. Go green.
Go white.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's all. Next, proceed with trustee comments, starting with Vice Chair Kelly.
Thank you. Well, I don't want to make light of this, but believe it or not, I'm human too, but it's 11:15, and I just want to get through my script, to be honest with you. So, first of all, I want to acknowledge Jack Lipton and the other faculty liaisons. We did have a frank and honest discussion. I look forward to working with you all, and I think the relationship can definitely improve over time, and I look forward to that. So, thank you. With regard to the faculty, I have a couple of acknowledgments. First of all, I want to give kudos to Dr. Mona Hannah Atisi for her appointment as the new Associate Dean for Public Health of the College of Human Medicine, underlying our commitment to public health. An example of Dr. Mona's inspired leadership is the RX Kids program at Flint's College of Human Medicine. The program is set to receive $16 million grant and aims to tackle poverty to improve the health of mothers and newborns in Flint. Second, congratulations to Professor Ronald Fisher, recently appointed to the growing Michigan Together Council by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, exemplifying our faculty's commitment to and impact on serving common good. Finally, I want to congratulate the 14 faculty who have received the Humanities and Arts Research Program Production Awards for 2023 academic year. These awards are granted by our Office of Research and Innovation and additional support from MSU Research Foundation. HARP supports important research leading to creative and performance projects and activities in the arts and humanities. As has been discussed throughout the board meeting, MSU is proud to uplift the arts on campus. It's been a busy couple of weeks around here, so I want to welcome back all of the students and congratulate our new students. But I also want to note that over the past 2 weeks, we have had over 300 new and transferring administrator and faculty academic staff orientations. So the university is absolutely growing. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kelly. Trustee Byram.
Thank you. I want to echo my thanks to Dr. Woodruff for your service over the last 10 months and stepping into the interim role as the president. And as it turned out, it's been a very difficult time for the university, and we've appreciated your leadership. Also, I'm looking forward to meeting with the new student liaisons. Hannah, we're looking forward to working with you again this year, and then the faculty senate liaisons. So we have much work to do, and I'm highly confident that together we can really make some significant progress. So I, too, want to welcome back the returning students and also acknowledge our new students. To put a finer point on some of the reports and readouts that you heard earlier today, and I will be brief with my comments, once again, MSU is the top pick for in-state students, and I want to put a mark on the in-state students, reinforcing our compelling value proposition. Our incoming class of over 11,000 new Spartans from Michigan, we have 8,000. So 8,000 out of that 11,000 of our incoming student class are from Michigan, representing all 83 counties. Michigan State University continues to receive impressive external recognitions. An example is that MSU earned a 4.5 out of a 5 rating in Money Magazine's 2023 Best College Rankings. This speaks volumes about our commitment to quality, affordability, and student outcomes. I was also thrilled to see that we were designated as an Innovation and Economic Prosperity University by the Association of Public Land-Grant Universities. And as the interim president acknowledged, there's more news, good news yet to come later in the month. So that will conclude my remarks. I hope we're off to a wonderful fall. Go green.
Go green. Thanks very much, Trustee Byram. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Yes, thank you. So welcome back to everyone. And I have a few remarks that were prepared as talking points from the administration, but I think I'll just try to curtail them in part because a lot of it was really echoing and amplifying what we already heard from our interim provost about increased diversity in our student body. But let me just highlight one concrete example of that in a particular college in our university, and that's the Law College. The Law College's 2022 incoming class was one of its most diverse in a quarter century. The incoming class looks to also be one of similar opportunity. And I want to say that I greatly admire the vision of Dean Green, and this is what she has said about how she envisions the law college's future. So these are her words, not mine. And it's for it to be Michigan's preeminent law school, preparing diverse lawyer leaders to serve diverse communities in Michigan and beyond. And that means so much to me because, as many of you know, I got my start at the Law College, and I've built an academic career very much on scholarship that champions creating a legal profession that reflects the diversity of the public that it serves. And so I'm very pleased to see that happening right here on our campus, and not just in the Law College, but that's a concrete example. I want to also, I hear you, Dr. Lipton, the work that we did on the bylaws, so thank you for acknowledging it. There's work that remains. Just as a bit of history, when I joined the board in 2019, December, I was told that the big project was going to be revising the bylaws. And at that point in time, not even all the trustees that are sitting here today were there, right? And it reminds me that we are more than just the individuals who sit here, but the board itself was committed to that, and I'm also mindful that now delivering on it, many of the ideas that were being discussed as I joined in December of 19, you now will see and have been implemented in the changes. That was almost 4 years ago. I get that some people earn a college degree in that time, and you might be thinking, is it going to take now like the time to earn a PhD for us to revise the policies? And I hope the answer to that is no. I think a big part of why we now actually see ideas that have been discussed and debated, redlined over the period of last summer and again this summer in multiple versions, is because we have a very effective secretary who helps us deliver. And so I just want to thank you again, Secretary Fletcher, for that. And I imagine that you will be seeing similar revisions and improvements in not the end of 4 years, but in the coming year. So I want to echo what Interim President Woodruff said when she was congratulating the leaders who've been recognized by Cranes. I think it's amazing that we have not one, but two, but three. So congratulations again to Chair Vassa for that, to Dean Forger, and VP Frace. I think that's just really outstanding for our institution. And I'll conclude my remarks by echoing Chair Vassar's report regarding Interim President Woodruff. You have brought stability and energy to this role in all the things you face, still also moving us forward on the strategic plan. And you have, among your many accomplishments, one that has really been impressed on me is your successful leadership in moving forward on improvements to the Title IX office, both coming out of the Quinn Emanuel report and other areas, finally overseeing the implementation of a certification process that we can really have confidence in as part of our board governance obligations. You have led through extraordinary times that no president would ever want to have to lead through. And we are better for your leadership. I thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Kanacki Jefferson. Trustee Pierce.
Thank you. I'm going to also welcome back, please pass on that to all of the student body and the faculty and all of the staff, because without all of you, we wouldn't have a university. Someone said earlier that I'm new to the board and that I was appointed by the governor. And I'm honored to be appointed, and I sit next to trustees that I am learning from and administration that I'm learning from, so I appreciate that as well. I will tell you that we have, Rima, you mentioned spirited and your son. We have very spirited debates as trustees. We don't agree on many things, but we get to a point where many times we vote. You heard today and in past meetings, we don't all vote the same way. But I assure you, I assure everyone here and everyone listening in, that every single one of us take our responsibility of duty and care for Michigan State University seriously, and we're working really hard. The other thing I would say to all of the survivors, to the swim representatives and dive representatives, to the students, we hear you and we're listening. And if you think we're not, I want you to know from our hearts we are. And we're trying to make the best decisions for the current and future of this university. I'm glad to be here. I also appreciate you, Dr. Fletcher, for all the work that you do. We have more work to do. We have more work to do on the bylaws. We have a lot of work to do on the policies. And we have much more to do on governance. But we are committed to that work and to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I didn't even see you do your comments, Sandy. Your comments. Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
I know. I was just, okay. I'm trying to remind her in a kind way. She's got a couple of things they wanted her to do.
Congratulations to Judd Herzer for being named as the new director of MSU Mobility. Let's give Judd a round of applause because I forgot.
as well as Shay Bryant. She is the Financial Analysis and Reporting Manager here at Michigan State for receiving the Daniel Robinson Accounting Award. It's a big deal, and it's hard. So congratulations to both of you. Apologize. Thank you.
I'm back. All right. I'd like to also welcome all of our returning students and our new students. Taylor, I look forward to working with you. Emily, I know Maddie's not here, but you all, it was a pleasure talking with you all tomorrow, and I look forward to closer connections with you all as we go forward in the year, and then welcome back to our faculty liaisons as well. For my canned remarks, there continues to be forward momentum in our quest to find a new president for MSU. As we shared in our recent community update, we remain confident that we will find an experienced leader who, as the prospectus calls for, has the intellectual vision, broad worldview, and personal integrity to inspire the university to new levels of excellence across communities, colleges, and disciplines. We were also pleased to welcome Joe Kramer, MSU alum and executive director of the Michigan Bean Commission. Did you all even know we had one? To the Presidential Search Committee, he brings a wealth of experience, including more than four decades in farming and agriculture. And I know from our ag community, as well as our land grant roots, that was really important to many that we include someone with that background. So welcome to Joe. Like others have said, there is so much inspiring work happening across our university. IPF, for example, did an extraordinary job cleaning up the campus after the major storm 2 weeks ago. They keep our campus looking great, and I don't want their hard work to go unnoticed. And so I would like to all, if we can, just applaud them for everything they did to And this morning, I'd also like to say a few words on one initiative that is near and dear to my heart, Spartan Supporting First Generation Farmers. If you haven't seen it, Heather's Lane, I'm looking at you because I appreciate you with doing this. I recommend you reading an MSU Today article about our bilingual agricultural program showcasing our strides in supporting first-generation Latino farmers and farm workers in Michigan. What I loved about the article is how it explains the deep connection of science with the rich culture of farming and how all of that plays a huge role in our community. Initiatives like these remind us all of how proud we should be to be Spartans. We are committed to uplifting one another and serving the common good. Go green. But I'm not done. All right. So I
did her prepared comments.
I did. All right. So I'd like to also echo the sentiments that have already been talked about with our interim president, Woodruff. You have shown grace under pressure. This has not been easy. And I recognize that a lot of difficult decisions you had to make personally. And I just want to thank you for hanging in there with us and sticking this out and for your commitment to stay on. Thank you. I'd also like to discuss the, looking at my notes. Oh, okay. I wanted to address something concerning a statement that was made concerning the changing of rules depending on who is in certain positions. And one thing that I would like to say, and I'm just speaking for myself personally, is that I believe that we all have to recognize that although we are quote-unquote politicians, we are humans as we sit here, we also bring unique perspectives in our roles as trustees. Quite specifically, to me, one of the concerns that I had when I got on this board was the bylaws. And from the very first meeting, it was expressed by me and Trustee Tebe and some others that we needed to begin the work of reframing our bylaws. We did not believe that they were consistent with what we felt we needed to do to move this university forward and also to change the culture that we thought was pretty problematic. And as my colleague to the left has indicated, we don't always get along on this board. I'm sure you know that. However, I do agree with her that I believe that we all at our core want to do what is the very best for this university. It's not blind to me that I am African American, that I am a woman. However, being that does not preclude me from also being able to see bigger pictures And I do think it's important for us to be able, as individuals, to be able to speak for how we feel without being pigeonholed as being a woman, pigeonholed as being African American, or for Trustee Tebe, being pigeonholed as being a survivor of sexual assault. We have so much more to us. And I think that we should have the ability to express ourselves without being maligned or in any way reprimanded that we're not representing a certain part of us, because I'm more than just one part of myself. I don't even know if I'm making sense, but hopefully you get my gist. That being said, the change for me of the bylaws came because my very first meeting at this university, I made a decision that changed the trajectory, I believe, of my tenure here on this board. Making a decision as an incoming trustee who has never met any of the people that I would be working with on who should be the board chair, as my very first, you know, vote, to me, placed me in a position that I never want to see someone else placed in. It has caused divisiveness. It has caused rancor. It has caused bullying. It has caused, to me, posturing, favors, doing one favor for another because of how you vote. None of these things should be part of what we are dealing with when we have to make decisions. It is not about Brianna and my own personal self-interest. And have I made mistakes as I have sat here on this board? Absolutely. And I have oftentimes publicly expressed the mistakes that I have made, and I have owned them, and I take accountability for them. But I feel wholeheartedly that to change our board chair is for the greater good of this board. Every 2 years, it has been an issue. We have relationships that have been fractured on this board because of that very one election. And so we need to look at it, and as a late judge who used to yell at me for being quiet in court said to me one time, he said, you keep doing this same thing and you're expecting a different result, you must be what? Insane. It's a broken system. If we continue to do this over and over again and expect a different result, we're fools. And a fool I am not. Maybe I need to read more books, as I was told yesterday. Maybe I'm just losing my identity as a black woman. I don't think so. I think I'm making this decision for the greater good of this university that I love, and I am tired of seeing the fractionalization on this board. And so I am very happy with the changes that were made. It has nothing to do with who's in leadership now. These changes were coming as of 4 years ago, and anybody that was around at that time can attest to it. This is not anything new, but we finally did what we were committed to do, which is to change our bylaws. That being said, I would also like to thank Trustee Emeritus Melanie Foster for an email that she sent to us concerning the photos, our presidential portraits. We have had many conversations. Chair Vassar has also alluded to this, that we recognize to you, Ms. DiBiagio, I think you're behind Vinny. There you are, that we need to give greater deference to those portraits, and we are going to do that. I love the suggestions you made. Trustee Emeritus Foster gave us a great set of suggestions as well, and so I think in the coming months we will be talking about that. I'd also like to talk about, just very briefly, because I know that Dan Kelly is going to kill me. I'm way over 3 minutes. But I'd like to talk about us as a board, just quickly, and this is going to be 60 seconds. Again, we're all individuals, but what I would like to see, and this is an answer to a question Emily asked us yesterday, what are your goals as a board? You asked us that, and we really couldn't answer it. Okay? We can talk about our committee work, but we really couldn't answer as a board collectively. What are we trying to do and accomplish here at this university? We need to prioritize as a board, goal set as a board. And I look forward to what I believe we have committed to as of yesterday, us talking collectively, so that we are not as individuals just out doing what we want to do, because it's not about me and any of us individually. Collectively, we are stronger together. I don't mean that's like a pun, no pun intended, but I think you get my drift on that. And so I do hope that we will be able to come back to you all and tell you, these are our strategic goals. These are some things we want to accomplish as a board. With that being said, I want to just thank my colleagues for the time we spent reflecting on one another and ourselves on Friday and yesterday, and I hope that this board can start to heal. I really do. Because if we can't, we're doing this university a disservice. With that being said, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Trustee Teabe.
I'm going to try to keep this brief because I had a meeting at 11:30 that I'm clearly very late for. I just want to say to Taylor, Emily, and Hannah, I'm really looking forward to working with you and Maddie this year as we're moving forward, and welcome back to campus. I want to thank Thomas Yatesko and Vinny Gore for all of your work for the students coming back and faculty and staff, and that we had a really successful move-in day. And I know I just want to make sure that your efforts don't go unnoticed, and please thank all of your staff for us as well. I have really enjoyed watching President Woodruff's Instagram account with all of her videos and giving tissues to parents as they're crying, riding her bike around campus. I've got a lot of students saying that they'd love to see her around campus, so thanks for bringing such a positive energy to move-in day. I also want to congratulate you on being appointed to the Leadership Committee of the Action Collaborative on Preventing Sexual Harassment in Higher Education. This is a national initiative of the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. So we're grateful for everything that you do for our community. The students touched on it, but I am really excited about the Health and Wellness Center and that groundbreaking that we had yesterday. And thank you for all three of you for speaking. I think it was very important. I did laugh while watching the other folks that spoke maybe a little too long, and you guys kept it real brief, so I appreciate that. I just think it's really important for us students, and thank you all for your support on that. And then lastly, I really want to talk about FRIB. Last May, we celebrated the start of the operations of FRIB, which is, again, the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Science user facility. It's only of its kind, located here on our campus, but also Trustee Denno and I were honored to be able to join Thomas and the President as we began a new chapter with FRIB and the new facilities chapter in the facilities global impact stories. We have the inauguration of the CNRS, which is the MSU Nuclear Physics and Astrophysics International Research Laboratory, which was very cool to be part of that. It's with a team from France, and it was very interesting to get to meet them, and got to see some students that day. But the International Research Lab is the first of its kind, again, and dedicated to nuclear physics and nuclear astrophysics. So I think that's really exciting for this campus. And with that, I'm done, and I got to go because I'm very late.
Thank you very much, Trustee Teabe. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes trustee comments.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor? The meeting is adjourned.